It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Alex are all here, and we have a lot to talk about, including those quarterly results Apple put out right after the show last week. $1 trillion next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 622, recorded Tuesday, August 7th, 2018. Vestigial Pedals. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Slide Belts. High-quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. If you want a better belt, go to slidebelts.com/TWiT and use the code TWiT for 20% off. And by Tres Pontas, premium quality extra virgin olive oil shipped directly to you from the Casablanca Valley in Chile. Visit trespontas.com/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak to save 20% off every bottle in your subscription. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak.
Yes, sir.
It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together with the top journalists in the Macintosh space and talk about Apple. Renee Ritchie, who is, in fact, the top journalist in the Macintosh space at imore.com. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
Doing great. As you can see, my eGPU has not exploded.
No.
My i9 MacBook Pro is not burst into flame. All's right with the world.
And your keyboard hasn't failed yet?
Well, okay. Pay no attention to this keyboard.
Ooh!
Fooled ya. No, genius. I got to put it right back. Isn't that genius? No crumbs genius. On this. Mm-mm-mm. Andy Inako's here. He's actually here with Alex Lindsay. They're together. So this puts to rest all the rumors that you two are the same person.
we did a lot of work on that. It's actually a cloning technology that we've
you'll know that it's either real or fake depending on how smoothly I can pass this object from one end of the screen to the other.
Wow, that almost looked real.
Yeah.
Great. So what brings you to DC, Andrew?
I'm seeing a person who's going to brief me about a thing that I can't talk about, and also to see Alex's wonderful new digs. And also, I've never been in 8K before.
8K 3D.
So every frame, like at least that we're capturing here, is like 30 megapixels.
Yeah.
So. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, this is actually, I think, the first public stream that we've done with this studio. If the guys go to the wide shot here, I'll show you.
This is Alex Lindsay in his new broadcast studio in Washington. Wow.
Yeah, so we just finished building this. Yeah. It's been many months of pain, as you know, because you built a studio, so you know what that means.
Yeah. But you got it. That's nice. And is this for a project you're working on, or are you going to rent this out? What's the plan?
We're planning to rent it out. Make it available. I mean, we've got we've got lots of clients here in DC that want to be able to do their broadcast, and so we
podcasts
I think mostly live, I mean, but podcasts as well, but I think that we're going to do a lot of live work. I mean, we're connected to all the broadcasters and, you know, here and Sat Dishes and everything else, so we can really do a lot.
Very nice. Very nice.
And so that's, you know, the DC facility was always built to do that, and it was kind of the backbone for a lot of our shows, and we decided to go ahead and put a studio on the front end, and so it's kind of fun.
Actually, I thought you were joking, Renee. He actually does offer 8K 360 streaming.
Yeah. Of course he does.
Of course.
Because 16K is not practical yet.
it's like if someone in the control room could like control function 4, that is like the highest resolution picture I will ever have taken of me.
Wow. Unbelievable.
And look at the depth of field on Alex too. I mean, it's
I know. What kind of cameras are you using up there?
These are Blackmagic Mini Ursas.
Oh, I love those. Yeah.
With 4K glass. And so they, one of the things we didn't want to do is have, broadcast is all 2/3 inch. By doubling that size, it shortens the depth of field a lot. It makes the set look bigger. And so the
You're talking about the sensor?
Nicer. Yeah, the sensor size. Super 35 sensor. So it's about a like 2.2 times bigger than a traditional broadcast sensor. So it, we think it looks nice.
I'm glad to see that you stuck with the Heil PR40 microphones, though.
Just for you, Leo. Those are
You break these out for Mac Break Weekly, and then you get the good microphones for the other stuff. Is that it?
No. We do the. It's the.
You can choose. You get to choose
for podcasting or anything that's going to be audio primary.
Right.
Then we use these, and then if we're doing video primary, then you end up using lavs. You know this thing. But I have had some experience, and I know that you hate lavs.
So, no, I'm not crazy about them, but if you're right, if people are focused on the video, they don't hear how. But, you know, I didn't notice it until I was listening to one of the Sunday shows, Face the Nation or Meet the Press, as a podcast, and the audio is terrible, and you never notice it on television. But, but as soon as you're hearing the audio only, it's echoey, it's television audio. So,
It really is, and you don't think about it because that's the way they all sound.
Right.
So we have both options. So
well, and I wonder if that maybe has changed.
Those like infomercials where they fake being a late night like an interview show, but it's actually promoting pills.
Yeah,
yeah, vitamins. Sorry? Are you guys selling vitamins? Before we go to that,
vitamins ads.
I want to ask Renee Ritchie if you survived last week. As we were signing off last week, Apple was announcing yet another record quarter.
Yeah, I mean, so there every quarter there's doubt, Leo, and I understand it. It's like being at a table in Vegas and the guy next to you rolls and wins, and you're like, okay, he won. He's probably going to lose next time, and he wins again, and you're like, okay, for sure. And then he wins, and you're like, he's got to lose. And every time they win again, you're like, he's got to lose. It's gambler's law. You got to lose. And once in a while, they've had hiccups, but repeatedly over and over again, they managed to ride primarily the iPhone gold mine into record shattering after record shattering quarters. And it was a tough compare for Mac and iPad because last year Apple released all the new Macs at WWDC and the new iPad Pros at WWDC. And this year they did not. So there was no compare for those in the numbers. But for iPhone, it's still doing well.
And for iPhone, it's the best quarter, the best results since iPhone, the heady days of iPhone 6. These are the great color graphs that Six Colors does, Jason Snell does. This is year-over-year revenue change in an iPhone. And that big hump on the left is, of course, iPhone 6 era, which is 2015. But 20% growth year-over-year in iPhone revenue this year, this quarter. You got to attribute that to the iPhone 10.
Yeah, well, the iPhone 6 sort of sucked a lot of upgraders up early because there was a lot of pent-up, same way like when the iPhone went to Verizon, there was a lot of pent-up demand for a bigger iPhone, so people rushed to get it, and that cost them upgrades and cost them sales later on. You had to pay, those are paid forward, essentially. And now with iPhone 10, their ASP, it's not so much that people are buying more of them, but Apple increased the price and didn't lose enough customers to lose money. They actually made money. So, that's sort of what you want to do in business.
Yeah,
so
look at this, 8 and 8 Plus, look at this graph. The average iPhone selling price, highest it's ever been, $717.
And Cook comment on that. He said it's not about the price of the iPhone. It's about the value the iPhone can deliver. And if people believe the iPhone is delivering value, then they're less price sensitive. And we have to remember that almost nobody plays sticker price. Even now when the contracts are gone, a lot of people pay their carrier instead of $8 a month, they pay them $9 or $10 a month. And it's almost invisible to them.
You know, that's one take on it. Tim's take. It's all about value. The other take is, hey, it's a fashion statement, and people who are buying at the high end of the market like that are less price sensitive. I think it'd be hard. You'd be hard pressed to say that there is that much more value in an iPhone 10 than there is in a $600 Android device.
You got the new design. That was the big thing. It's same like you got the bigger iPhone before. Now you got you got to delete your bezels. A year earlier by pointing up another $100.
Yeah.
And now the interesting thing is how many companies are rushing super high-end phones to the market.
Yeah, but nobody really, very few people would put value and Apple in the same sense, right? They're not a value company. They're a premium company.
It depends on what you value.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. So like because when you buy that iPhone, again, it comes with AppleCare, it comes with Apple stores, it comes with all the free software that they provide for that platform. If you like the App Store and the way they vet apps on the App Store, it comes with that.
Oh, that's a good point.
Overall, you still have to, like, people aren't going to just
ecosystem. I mean, there are some people the ecosystem has yeah. value. Yeah. Well, it's funny because I was thinking of getting another electric vehicle besides a Tesla, and then I realized after we drove to Tahoe this past week that the value of the Tesla is not the car; it's the supercharger network, right?
Well, and also they cool the batteries, which a lot of cars don't, right. And then you have to replace your batteries after a couple. Of, right. It's again, it's the whole package.
It's the whole package, right? It's yeah. not, you could never say that Tesla is a value car, a value priced car.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Andy. But, I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off.
I was just going to say that with the iPhone 10, I think Apple has reminded everybody that when you get the top of the line iPhone, it really isn't just it really doesn't compete with a $600 Android phone, even like a Google Pixel, which is one of the best phones out there, whether it runs iOS or Android. You're going to get something that is absolutely unique to mobile computing, like Face ID. I really think that the iPhone 10 is just the story about Face ID. It's such a compelling, cool feature that for people that are already an extra $150, $200, that's still money to anybody. But if you're already in for $800, that is a compelling thing to get $1,000 for, particularly if you're in the habit of always buying the best iPhone on the market. So when I say it depends on your definition of value, the idea of getting a $500 Android phone or even a $250 Android phone that does 80% of even the best phones on the market, that's value. That's saving money. But there's a certain actual sort of limbic appeal to getting an iPhone 10 that for a lot of people is going to be definitely worth the extra $150 amortized over $200. You just don't get that kind of experience.
I just feel that the notch really justifies that extra $300.
Well, it's the notch. You really, yeah. It's actually it's really the memoji. You know, like the memoji yes. is worth
actually $200. You're joking. You might actually be right.
I love memoji. Like
memoji's not till this fall, but okay, you might be right that those little things sell more phones.
Or the animojis. You know, the issue yeah. is like I send memojis and animojis to my kids, and then they want to send them back, and they're like, oh, your mom only has
yeah.
it. Yeah. I'm sorry, you can't. You can't
have to have an iPhone 10 if you want the emojis. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know.
Renee, well, is this this is not traditionally a big iPhone quarter, though, right? This is, or is it?
It's not. I mean, it's not as bad as the next quarter is while everyone's waiting for the new phone. But it's nothing like the holiday quarter.
Is this the first full quarter since it came out?
No. Usually the holiday quarter.
It's not even that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, this is when people start whining. But I mean, it's like I would never. You see people go into stores and buy like an iPhone 10 the day before iPhone 11 comes out. So I can't predict human behavior any better than anybody else. But the Pixel 3 is supposed to have an even bigger notch now, Leo. So I don't know if that's going to be even more expensive. Are we paying by notch now?
I don't know. Now I have to decide. We should point out this average iPhone selling price. Yeah. $717 is based on an average over four quarters. So there's a kind of a ballistic effect. The iPhone came out in Q1, but it's contributed to the larger price in Q3 because it's now three out of the four quarters. Yeah, it's a running average. Some bad news, if you're an iPad fan, iPad sales are absolutely flat in the last four quarters.
Again, it's a terrible compare for them because they had just put out new iPads at in June of 2017, and they did not put out anything new in 2018. So nobody bought anything. Everyone's anticipating the fall release.
11 million units. It's not terrible. And again, this is a four-quarter average. He does those running averages.
Yeah.
Mac sales year over year down 13%. Another down quarter, third in a row, and the largest.
I don't believe any MacBook Pros. I think the MacBook Pro came out too late to be included in that quarter. Yeah. So again, you're competing against a quarter where there was every, like the MacBook Pro, MacBook, even I think the MacBook Air got a token bump, and the iMacs were all updated in June. And this year, only the MacBook Pro and too late for that quarter.
And I imagine the MacBook Pro will contribute to a better quarter next time. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, and I think one of the things when we look at the flat iPad and the Mac low range is that there aren't as many apps that drive these computers. There's not as many features that we look at. Oh my. I have to have that. You know, I need to upgrade.
You mean a new one? Yeah.
It's not going to run fast enough. Yeah, a new one. Right. Because like my kids are using iPad 2s, and they're quite happy with them. They play, their Roblox goes as fast as it goes on their 13-inch, And so the problem is that they because you can seamlessly go back and forth between these different pieces, you don't feel the need to upgrade every. That's the big thing that we've gotten to this crazy turn where we're buying a new phone every year. We just didn't do that before, and so, I remember I kept my my Trio I had for 3 or 4 years, you know, and so those are the kinds of things that have, that's why the phone explodes. And then the computers, I mean, I'm using a 2015 that I'm still happy with. Although I played with a new one, you know, I was like, I'm going to have to upgrade, but anyway, but I, you know, so it is faster. Yeah. But with the iPads, all my stuff works great. You know, not on necessarily version one, but the last couple versions. And so I don't feel the need to upgrade either.
Yeah. And also, you have to really put a lot of blame, I think, at Apple's feet. But it is true that we haven't had really significant updates to the MacBook line within those quarters. But that's kind of been true for the past couple of years with Mac. And so on the one hand, you can say that, okay, well, usually a lot of these numbers get spiked upwards by exciting new designs. But Apple also should be taken to task for really not showing any public enthusiasm for the Mac for the past couple of years. And with the iPad stuff, it's interesting to look at the numbers. Because it seems as though Apple has really polarized the awesomeness of their devices in terms of price. That one of the best computers I think Apple has ever made is the $320 iPad, but also one of the other best computers they've ever made is the $1,000 iPad Pro. So there's not like there's a spectrum. It's like if you get people excited about adding quantities of the lower end iPad, now suddenly every iPad sold is making $600 less. And contributing that much less to the till with every purchase.
Let's see. Okay, maybe there's one more graph before we. I know what I wanted to quote Jason Snell. He said the Mac has currently replaced iPad as the product line that makes me cringe every 3 months when sales figures are released. But I think there'll be good news next quarter. I hope there'll be good news next quarter, and I hope Apple. I'm still thinking Apple keeps the Mac alive for more than just profit. It's sentimental reasons. It's a signature product, and developers need to develop on the Mac for iOS. So I think that they're going to keep doing pros. And
I think Neil Seibert keeps saying that, you know, Apple should just. And please forgive me if I'm misquoting you, Neil, but you know that if you were just looking at the numbers, Apple should divest itself of its legacy computer business because Google doesn't have that problem and they can race ahead. And Microsoft, you know, doesn't have the new business, so that's fine. But they should dive and just go in on it. But when you look at what Apple's doing, like they're investing significant silicon resources in things like T2, which you know they don't have to do. Their Macs were perfectly functional without T2, but that's a big investment in something that Apple considers a core competency. And they're putting a lot of work into not just releasing new versions of macOS, but really redoing macOS from the foundation up, rewriting the windowing server, which has been problematic. Like Discovery D was problematic, but they're rewriting LaunchD and they're rewriting, they're doing APFS and they're basically rebuilding macOS from the inside. And that's, again, considerable resources. And I don't think they would be expending all that stuff internally. They could put those things on iPhone, but they're doing it because they believe the Mac is a valuable product for them to have.
Yep, I agree.
Still, I think that if you're a consumer Mac user, you better have an exit strategy just in case Apple decides that consumers are best diverted towards other Apple platforms, and Macs maybe are going to be reserved for people who need pro level devices. Not that I have any special knowledge or I even necessarily believe that Apple's going to be dumping consumer Macs, but they've really shown no enthusiasm whatsoever for the low end of the middle range of performance and price. So until they once again show that here is a Mac Mini. We've not just swapped in a processor that is now less expensive for us to put in than the lower speed processor that was there for the previous 2 years, but we have actually moved it forward. We've moved the fab forward. We have added new features to it that are going to be completely relevant to how people are going to use like a hideable desktop computer. Until I see that kind of excitement, I'm not going to put a whole lot of money on the idea of the Mac as a consumer device still existing in 5 years.
Meanwhile, the Apple Watch hit an air pocket.
This is, yeah, what does that mean?
Well, I think Tim doesn't fly commercial. I think that's what that means.
It's a good thing if you're scuba diving and you're out of air. It's a bad thing if you're flying.
He meant an updraft, right? He meant an air pocket is where you fall, and an updraft is where you go up. But anyway, he did say record quarter performance, June quarter performance with growth in the mid 40% range. He said 50% growth for the last few quarters. So it's not maybe slowing a little bit, but still growing very strong, the Apple Watch. Again, we have no...
It's Bezos numbers.
Yeah, I like it. That's exactly That's exactly what Jason puts on this graph. He says, so he's trying to give you a graph of Apple Watch sales, which he can't do. So he says, source Bezos, scale Bezos, yes. Source stuff Tim Cook says sometimes. And he's just basically made a graph with Tim Cook quotes. Great, best yet, record, up 50% from last year, 50% unit growth for the third straight quarter. 50% revenue growth and a Q2 record, hit an air pocket and has gone to a whole new level, whatever that is. And nice guessing, Jason, on the bar graph.
That's exemplary work.
I like the Bezos scale. We may be using that more often. let's see. Services, we knew this would be the case. I even asked you to pay attention to that, Renee, and I gather that this was a very good quarter once again, $9.5 billion, up from $9.2 last quarter.
Yeah, and it's finally a story that Wall Street seems to appreciate.
Oh, yeah. Did we mention Apple at a $1 trillion market cap?
Yeah.
Did we mention that?
I mean, it's a vanity metric, but what a big number.
Right. Well, it really is. For a little reality check there as well, is it's a vanity number, especially given the fact that it wouldn't be anywhere near that if they weren't spending hundreds of billions of dollars buying their own stock back. I mean, there's a little bit of a, you know, the stock, when we really talk about stock value, I mean, I think Apple's doing great. They're going to keep on making more money. That's great. But that is not what's giving them a $1 trillion valuation. What's giving them a $1 trillion valuation is basically taking a otherwise stagnant stock and basically inflating it by buying their own and keeping the investors happy. Otherwise, people would have moved on.
I'm also impressed that they've managed to become a $1 trillion company without amassing a whole bunch of really terrible scandals. Like, I have so much respect for so many things that Amazon has achieved, but I do not like the fact that every single conversation about Amazon that consists of more than four sentences has to include the phrase, but they treat their lowest paid workers like crap, that Facebook is a very successful company, but they are essentially a beehive full of horrible ideas implemented carelessly with thought to how best to protect its users from the community that its own service have created. Whereas Apple, all you basically get are a couple of really intense attention-getting, oh, well, they're recycling a certain element from their phone frames, but they could be recycling more. Or, yes, they're paying their workers their subcontractors in China very, very well and treating them very, very well compared to other manufacturers, but maybe they could be treating them well. So the fact that you always take things tongue in cheek when you have a company that likes to position itself as, oh, well, we are a very ethical company and we are a very green company and we are very, very positive and we have values that we feel that are very, very positive. But Apple tends to actually deliver on that stuff too. So that has to be mentioned.
And I think that one of the things when we look at those stock buybacks, the only thing I was going to say is that I think that one of the things we see here is this schism between Apple's personality, I think, and how much money they're making. They're actually making money. They're focused like a startup, you know, and they're making money like the biggest company in the world. And the problem is they literally don't have a culture of, we could just experiment with a bunch of things. We could take that $100 billion and we could buy T-Mobile and create a cell network and buy something else and do this. You know, they don't want to be distracted and they have something that works. I think that someday down the road, we may say, well, that might have been a good idea, you know, to get distracted and move into other businesses. So far, they've been able to leverage this really well, but it does create a pretty, you know, like very top heavy situation where if the iPhone collapsed for some reason, Apple would still make billions, but not in the same way.
Actually, when you talk about stock buybacks, it reminds me that Elon Musk this morning dropped a bombshell on Twitter. Not the first time Elon's done this. This morning, a couple hours ago, I'm considering taking Tesla private at $420. That's per share. Funding secured. Yeah. And then he tweets, good morning.
But he's, yeah, unfortunately, he's almost becoming like what Donald Trump is to high-level politics, what Elon Musk is becoming because he says these things and you don't know whether you can dismiss them because maybe he had a bad fig in his breakfast or something, or this is just a passing thought that he's not really going to commit to. Didn't the stock like just or maybe he was just
they've actually the market's taking it seriously. The stock suspended trading. So whatever he's meant, he's certainly had an effect. There's no doubt about that. I love the we were showing the Times infographic from last Thursday on what $1 trillion is. It's Apple is worth way more than all the major automakers in the world. Apple is worth more than the entire media industry. The American media industry, if you put Netflix, Comcast, Disney, all the major news publishers and all the TV channels, it would still be $848 billion less than the trillion that Apple is worth. That's a lot of money.
It seems like every single time there's either an article, there's never been a really cool like animated infographic like that, but they all like remind me of the same SCTV sketch where it's like a Russian broadcaster with a big map of the USSR behind him saying, look how puny they're now. I'm going to take the country of Australia, massive continent, yes. Look how tiny it is when we put it inside the borders of Russia. Now let's add. It's like, okay, that's fine. I mean, but the fact that it's a $1 trillion company, it doesn't help that keyboard any, does it? And it doesn't solve the dongle problem.
No, and so in fact, we say that every time we talk about, as we have for the last 20 minutes, stock pricing and quarterly results. It's only a small indicator in what we care about, which is, do you want to, you know, how do you use your Mac? How do you use your iPad? What do you want?
Totally different game.
It's a different game entirely.
And it's the only thing that's really important to Apple and to all the companies in Silicon Valley is that it is about employee retention. Yeah. So they have, you know, this is the golden handcuff that keeps all of these employees. If that stock stops going up, they start deciding they can leave and they can move on. But every time they have another quarter where they're going to get another couple hundred shares of stock that are going to be worth thousands of dollars, they go, maybe I'll wait a little bit longer. And for, you know, right now, everything is so competitive when it comes to engineering, when it comes to product management, when it comes to all the things that they need. There's, if you've worked at Apple, you could work anywhere, you know, to, you know, and get a job quickly. And so part of the reason they're doing the buybacks, part of the reason they're making sure that their stock goes up, and part of the reason it has to keep moving up is because they'll start losing their employees. That's the case for, you know, that's the challenge right now for Facebook. If it doesn't turn this around, it could lose a lot of its best people in a couple quarters.
And you're talking about the highest, not necessarily the best engineers, but we're talking about the executives that when you need to bring somebody on to run your new movie company, you need to convince them to walk away from 12 years in the actual movie business at which they're now making enough money that it doesn't even matter what you do with it anymore. So if you were going to tempt them to Apple, you're not only going to have to give them new ideas, but you're also going to have to say, we're going to give you so much money that we need to come up with a new word to replace avarice.
Well, because
this will be,
and I would say upper middle, you know, because middle and upper middle, because the thing is there's a lot of people that are, you know, making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, not millions, but hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, but they're getting these little stock hits.
I think there's a huge competition among engineers in Silicon Valley, and it's Facebook,
absolutely,
and it's Apple, and it's Google, and the stock price is a big deal for if you're, you know, a good engineer.
It's everything, because a lot of folks are getting their salary is one number, and then their stock is another, and they know that is their,
but,
you know.
Let's point out that a high stock price does not necessarily a good thing. An engineer is looking for something that's going to be high. That they
get them at a discount, right? Like they get
value. What you're looking at is future prospects. Same thing the market's looking at is future prospects, not what their price is today.
Which is why you need to keep on moving that stock up and do whatever you have to do that. So if you have a stagnant, the problem is this is a train that you're not allowed to get off, you know, as a company. The challenge when you get into this, when you start giving away stock, is that you have to keep, you know, edging it up. In fact, big growth quarters of growing 30% a year or 40% a year makes that game harder and harder and harder. Apple's actually better off growing 10 or 15% a year or 20% a year and not having anything bigger than that.
Yeah,
and
from the point of view of an employee, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Well, but I think that the stock value to Apple, that is the value. like, you know, like that the stock is to Apple. Apple
Yeah, they don't get more money because their stock's price is higher.
All they care about is their employees. Yep. All they care about is employee retention, and the entire stock value and pumping it up and making sure that it keeps moving forward is all about keeping employees.
If you think if they didn't do the buyback, you think it'd be as high as it is?
No. I think it'd be the valuation would be between $1 and $200 billion.
A buyback benefits shareholders because it reduces the number of shares. So in effect, it's increasing the value of that one share you hold.
Because they're not buying it back. Apple's not buying them back and then keeping the stock. So they're not trying to buy the company back. They are increasing the value of every share,
every single share,
which benefits. So it's purely it's another version of a dividend.
Right. Right.
Can I just say that on this set with these cameras and these lights, I feel as though it's completely inappropriate to be talking about, well, I'm very, very bullish on Apple this quarter.
It does look a little like CNBC.
What are the tariffs going to do?
In Squawk Box today, Andy and Otko.
We go to Macau.
Alex Lindsay. And from Macau, Renee Ritchie.
Bum, bum, bum.
You know, do you, Karsten, you wouldn't happen to have a fire starter on you, would you? You do? Do you have a knife and a bottle opener too?
I do.
And it's where is it? Where are you keeping that? I thought you probably shouldn't bring a knife in the studio.
I've got it very close to me.
It's in your belt buckle. He's wearing the fabulous. This is my favorite slide belt, but we're going to show some more. This is the what do you call this? The utility belt?
Survival.
This is survival. Yeah, this isn't useful. This is survival. Look at this thing. This looks like a regular belt buckle. By the way, the rest of the belt's in the box, too. I just showing you the belt buckle. The slide belt is an amazing ratchet-based belt that you're going to love. But in his belt buckle, Karsten has... Let me open it. Oh, this is, by the way, to protect you. You cannot get the knife out unless you open that side there. All right. That's, by the way, very sharp. Notice it also has a bottle opener. And then over here... Hey, somebody stole my light! So... You know what? Get Jason Howell in here. He took the light out of my survival belt. This is one of a number of great belts. Actually, we're all... That's all right. Karsten, you don't have to give me your light. Did you steal it out of here, Karsten?
What if you need to start a fire?
This is you can use this as a fire starter, as well as a very tiny but very useful, and as you can see, very bright LED flashlight in your belt buckle. Now my son's saying, you know what? We should do a little slide belt fashion show. I'm wearing... I don't know how well you can see this. Let me get this out of the way here. I'm wearing my fabulous slide belt. Now, let me show you what's great about the slide belt. It's a ratchet design, okay? So when I slide it off, I'll open it up so you can see it. These ratchets mean that when I put it on, it's kind of almost infinitely adjustable, which is great because sometimes I eat a big meal and I would take out a notch or two. Sometimes I'm feeling extremely thin. Look at that twit. Isn't that nice? And I'll just slide it in there. I love that sound the slide belt makes. Slide belts are available at slidebelts.com/twit. There's the survival belt in a variety of flavors from full grain and top grain leathers to high quality canvas and animal friendly vegan. We thought we'd do a little, you want to do a little fashion show? Come here. Hank, my son is here. Can Hank be in this? Hank's here. Hank is wearing the black on black, which I really like. The canvas, is that leather or canvas? Top grain leather and the black belt. Show that there, Hank. Isn't that nice? Hank's pants never fall down. He's wearing that beautiful slide belt. Also, from the slide belt, Brian, come up here. And Hiron and Nettie are from slide belt. Nettie, what are you wearing there? He's too cool to show his slide belt. Look at that. There's the canvas. That's very nice. Yeah, and I see Brian's got the leather. These guys are cool. They're hip. They're happening. And should they have a large meal, which we're going to feed them momentarily, they can just let it out a notch. I love my slide belt. You will too. High quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. And so, you know, I just have to say, so much more comfortable because with the old fashioned belt with the holes, you know, it never fits quite. It's either just a little too loose or just a little too tight. The patented ratchet design adjusts precisely to you with 32 separate adjustments, which makes it super comfortable. Here's the canvas slide belt. So what you do, oh, I like this antique brass buckle. This is pretty. So what you do when you get the belt, you'll see that inside the belt, they have markings for a variety of sizes. So you cut it to the size you want. You could be a little generous. You might, you know, you might add an inch or two down the road. Then you put the end in here, and it locks it in. You can later unlock it and adjust the belt to your desire. But the ratchet is so awesome. Let me show you this other side. It goes in, and it's got the ratchet on there, and it just slides in and ratchets right up like that. It's such an improvement to the traditional belt because you can remove the buckle. You can mix and match with other straps. Honestly, that's really cool, right? You've got all sorts of customization and versatility. I love this. This is, you know what? I'm taking this one home. That's it. You can. I like this brass buckle. This is beautiful. This is
gorgeous.
This is a nice canvas, animal friendly, vegan. You can wear them casual around the house. You know, this would be a good casual belt, or then get out the top grain leather. You know, for a special occasion, special date. If you're not convinced, full 1 year warranty and free exchanges and no hassle returns. Oh, look at that plaid. I like that. The red plaid. That's nice. That's fun. Here's what you do. If you're ready for a better belt, and I know you are. Do they have them for women too, right? Yeah. Men or women. This would be a great gift. I think a great groomsman gift for the monogrammed one, you know? You could put the date of the wedding or the initials of the bride and groom. Slidebelts.com/twit. Use the code TWIT at checkout, and you're going to get 20% off. You don't have to tell the groomsmen you got 20% off. Slidebelts.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT at checkout. 20% off your order. I know, you know, I know they're all, you know, you probably don't want to give a groom a knife, but I think this would be a really good gift for the groomsmen, right? The survival belt and the fire starter and just be careful.
I can't. All I can say, Leo, is I can't wait to try it.
You mean the belt or the knife?
Yeah. Belt.
Yes. Belt.
Oh, you want and one? Knife. Oh, I get it. I'm sorry. I didn't understand completely. Hiram says two thumbs up. We'll send. Yes, you're getting your belt. You can see that's, by the way, that's a picture of Alex rethinking his belt. Slidebelts.com/twit. Don't forget to use the code TWIT and you get 20% off your order. I have to say, since I've been wearing these, I was a suspenders guy, right? Because I could never get a belt that was comfortable. No more suspenders. I got the slide.
Legit belt. Ordering so many of these, Leo.
You know, maybe it's just me, but as we get sometimes a little heftier, it's nice to have a belt. You have a big meal. Henry likes those tomahawk steaks. You get a couple of those, and you'll be glad you got a slide belt. That's all I'm saying.
If your belt turns your pants into sweatpants, you don't need to wear actual sweatpants. That's the truth of life.
There's another side effect to it. You actually look a little sharper. You know, you don't want your belt to be so tight that your belly's hanging out, but you don't want it to be so loose that your pants are falling down. It's great. You have the flexibility to get it just right every time. The fit is perfect. Slidebelts.com/twit. Use the code TWIT at checkout, and you're going to get 20% off. Moving right along. Did we do everything in the quarter? Were there any other notes, Renee, from the
I mean, the only one call? That was interesting to me was that when Tim Cook said that anecdotally, they're starting to see people who want an Apple Watch and are then buying an iPhone to get Apple Watch. And that sort of hints to the ecosystem play we talked about earlier, where it's not just the phone, but it's the sum of the phone. And maybe you really want the Apple Watch, or maybe you really want the Apple TV, or you really want Apple Music or some other service. And all of that is what gets you to buy it, to make that decision to buy into Apple. And they're getting much, much better at getting people to buy in bigger and bigger.
Well, it's exactly as you're saying. It's an ecosystem of services. And the value comes from not just one thing, but the products as a whole. But we've always said that. That's what Apple's been going for, that lock-in, right?
And you have that social system, too. I mean, you get, as an iPhone user, every time you get a green text, you're like,
peer pressure, baby.
You know, like, there's 1,000 things I can't do now. Like, I won't get any of your updates on my computer, and I won't,
It's not even like there is technical lock-in, but there's also sort of an emotional lock-in that's a positive thing. I was on the train yesterday coming home from Boston, and there was a gaggle of lovely, like, older ladies. There was actually a gaggle of four, hooked up with another gaggle of three doing something that only women can do that I envy. That one of them just says to the other, I like your nail polish.
Oh, yeah.
And then suddenly it's a gaggle of seven people. Anyway, what I'm saying is that they're all talking about Apple
stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I like your nail polish, Andy. I think it's gorgeous. I can say that.
You know, I went with something different.
Nude.
We're in D.C., so I got to be patriotic.
I like that.
But yeah, people are comfortable buying more Apple products because in general, again, unless they haven't bought a $4,000 MacBook with a terrible keyboard, every time they've bought an Apple product, it's worked out very well for them. So the next time that there's an opportunity to buy something Mac, like a smart speaker, they're really, really interested in taking that step. Or an Apple TV. It doesn't necessarily have to be the leader in the market. It's an Apple product. And it's not just being a fanboy or a fangirl. It really is that I've had such a good track record with this company that I'm willing to simply say I really want a streaming box. I'm just going to buy the Apple one.
Last week, Alex Lindsay said I'd buy an Apple car sight unseen.
Oh, yeah.
Because you trust him. Bike.
I think I've said that for years. I mean, and I think that Apple has a certain number of us that will just go, well, they're coming out with something that would fit perfectly into, you know, what I'm doing. You know, I think that I think there's, you know, millions of people that would buy a car from Apple. If Apple said, again, if Apple with the phone, they don't have to. I mean, it's useful for them to do the launch event. But I still think just for them to prove the situation, if they just said, order everything the Friday before we actually do the launch event, you know, then you're first in line. They would, all those people that buy right afterwards, you know, they would all do it immediately. They would,
you kind of did that. You used to do that. You, Travis, your friend down at the Apple store in San Francisco,
yeah.
You'd call them up, like, say, whatever they're announcing, I want three of them.
Yeah, yeah. Just sort that out. You know, yeah. You know.
I don't know if Apple's in that same exalted status.
No, I'm not saying they could sell all of their phones that way, but I bet you they could sell, you know, tens of millions of phones on the Friday before the launch event.
I think
people knew that they were going to get ahead. If I knew that I was going to get ahead of everybody else in line and I know that I want it sight unseen, I think that now
I'm going to put my finger to the wind, but I think it's changed because I honestly believe that partly because these phones are so expensive now. It is no longer an automatic, 2 years, it's time for my new iPhone.
But you get it free now, don't you, from a lot of carriers?
I see more and more people say, I'm happy with my iPhone 6 or 6S. It's too expensive. I'm not going to buy a 10. Don't you?
It's like computers. It's like computers when you could do email, right?
You're not going to sell the $65 million without the presentation in that quarter, but selling the first 10? You know, I think that they might
sell 10.
There's
a certain,
What if they did? So what if they did sort of like a version of Project Red where like a charity sort of thing that said sight unseen, we have the first 100 right here.
Well, I would say
in our offices for a $1,000 over the list price, which will go to this charity.
What would make more money is if they said, here's the deal, sight unseen, you're going to buy it. It's going to be the best one that we make. It's not going to be any, you know, it's going to be the top of the line one. It's going to cost $25 more. They would generate $25 million to $50 million for some charity by saying, you know, just buy it ahead of time and not, you're benefiting charity and you're benefiting, you know, literally $25 more on your eye was going to go to it. You buy it sight unseen. You know, Apple could do that tomorrow and people would.
But how much earlier would they have to do this so that it would actually be sight unseen? But by the time you're like a week or 2 weeks in advance, already we've gotten like we feel as though we know what the new phones are going to be. But
we don't know. All I'm saying is that for me, I would love to not have quite the same crowd, so I don't have to wait 3 weeks for my phone. Like, as a true believer,
you're in a thin
on the phone,
thin icing thin, on the cake. Thin. You're not.
I would say that's, but that thin, I bet you is 10 million.
It's a lot of money. Yeah, no, I agree.
It's 10 million thick. And the thing is that what we would love to do, you know, when Apple gets into that whole culture of, you know, strengthening the core of those people, feeling like you can get in front of a line because you're not waiting for them to tell you what it is. There's a lot of people that would do that. And I'm not saying everybody because they sell hundreds of millions of phones. I'm just saying there's 10 million, you know, 10 or 15 million that would probably just go, I'm going to buy it because now I don't have to wait for 3 weeks. And folks who want to buy it ahead of time shouldn't have to wait.
You need an Apple bespoke edition or The Apple Premier Club Concierge Edition. Yeah, I mean, no, I think that
first. But there's already the Apple, like the subscription program where you just get a new iPhone every year. You give back your old one, you get a new one, and that those people are automatically getting.
I've been thinking I really ought to do that because I'm going to get the new iPhone every year. Is it the same price?
Yeah, it's the same price. It's basically a $0 lease, and every year you get a new car.
I should do
car.
It because like, I know. I mean, I'm going to get the new iPhone every year. So yeah.
And I wonder you wonder whether that's where all of this is really. I mean, when we see the drivers of constant growth.
So Microsoft's done with Windows and Office is a subscription, basically.
An iPhone as a service.
Yeah, as a service. You know who's really happy about $1 trillion? I didn't realize this. Warren Buffett. His stake in Apple is now worth 50. Is this right? I can't be reading this right. $50 billion. $50 billion. He bought more Apple in January. I don't know what he spent for his $50 billion, but that's phenomenal.
He doesn't lose a lot of money.
And the thing is for him, you buy that much of stock, and because you're buying it, it increases. When he announced that he was doing, he probably made $5 billion out of it.
So his initial investment was 10 million shares for $1.1 billion. He has bought more since, so it's hard for me.
That's like 7-Eleven money for him.
Yeah, well, I get billion here, billion there. It's worth $50 billion now. Jeez. So talking about services, I do notice more and more Apple. I mentioned this last week, more and more Apple Pay terminals. I'm using the Apple Watch a lot more. There's just something. There's this hump that you get over, and now I use it. I just used it. The other thing I love, and especially because I have the new fingerprint reader on the new MacBook Pro, and remember, I eschewed the touch bar for the last 2 years, is I can buy stuff, expensive stuff, just by touching the fingerprint reader.
I love that you can buy like a $70,000 Tesla on Apple.
You
can use your Apple.
I'm looking at my Model 3 and it says, well, you got to put down $2,500 and we'll start building it. Pay here with Apple Pay.
For people with a high credit score and a low impulse control.
Well, we had that story on MacBreak recently like months ago. They
didn't do it. My wife's looking at me, shaking her head. I didn't do it.
Remember, there was that story in the UK where the guy bought the Bentley on Apple Pay. It was the biggest Apple Pay transaction ever. The Rolls, I forget what it was, but he just dropped the whole thing on Apple Pay.
Can you buy slide belts with Apple Pay? You got to do that, guys. I'm got to do the Apple Pay slide belt thing. Boop. I tell you what, when I see an ad on Instagram, if I can't pay for it in Apple Pay, or Amazon Pay, I'm not going to fill in stuff on my phone in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially like when
that's how I got my first slide belt, by the way.
Oh, nice.
On the phone in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's awesome. Especially when I'm traveling, I will use contactless payment definitely if I want like a soda, if I want to get something. If I can't use it and I have to, God forbid, use the swipe, it's like
you're living in the Stone Ages again.
Lisa does not know about.
I don't worry about contactless pay. I don't worry about NFC. Whereas I'm the guy. Ever since I saw the video where it's not just ATMs and not just gas pumps now, but also there are people who are sneaking an entire like front bezel over the point of sale card readers now. That is just like a hat, like molded to these exact.
And what
same
does it
thing,
say?
Like, well, no, it's like a complete duplicate of, again, you're at the register and here's the keypad and the swipe that you have to use. And someone just distracts the clerk for 1 second.
Puts that on top of it.
Snaps this new top on top of it. Looks exactly like the old one.
They couldn't do that with Apple Pay, right? You couldn't steal Apple.
You would get the one-time token, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't be any good to you.
When we were in Chicago, the waiter took the card, and we were just like, our mouths dropped down. We haven't seen that in a decade. Like, taking our card to someplace we can't see it? What?
That's what we do here in America. You Canadians, you just don't know. I know. The first time I used a credit card in Europe, and they came to the table with this card reader, I was like blown away. But here in the States, the waiter always takes your card.
We always have the card readers that they bring it to your table. Yeah.
So Lisa doesn't know. Okay. That I just bought this with Apple Pay.
Don't say a word. Don't let, I know it's a party going on in here.
We saw this electric bike in Tahoe, and I said, oh, my God, it looks like an Indian. It looks like one of those old motors, the 1920s motorcycles. And I just, I couldn't resist. And it, if it weren't for Apple Pay, I probably wouldn't have. If I'd had to, like, give them cash or write a check.
She's canceling your cards immediately, Leo.
She can't cancel my watch.
Yeah, see, that's one of them phony electric bikes where it'll go 25 miles an hour even if you ain't pedaling.
Oh, yeah.
My electric bike, it don't move unless I move.
This is a Jacko. Loop. This is what we call a loophole electric bike. Yeah, electric bike. Just it's a, got just pedals, like, but they're vestigial.
Yeah.
You don't actually use them. It's
still pedal.
It's a, yeah.
Vestigial. Who makes it? Got hoax pedals.
Isn't that? Okay, see? Alex wants it now. Super 73. Oh, yeah. Super 73.
I know them. I've read about the makers. They actually modeled it after like a 1970s like mini bike.
You know, look at the. It's got a headlamp like an old motorcycle. It looks like the motorcycle that Lawrence of Arabia died on, is what it looks. What it looks like. Okay, I'm just saying. All right, Apple Pay. I'm telling you, it makes you spend money. It makes you spend money.
No, that's exactly
should
right.
Another one?
That's why it's a godsend to retailers.
Like it. Lisa says, she says, it's okay if you buy one, but you got to buy another one now. Everything I buy, I have to buy two of them. That's
Leo,
togetherness.
Just if you're really going to be fair, like if you're buying a belt for Alex, you should buy me one of those bicycles so we come out even.
You don't want the belt? You want the bicycle? I was sending you the belt.
Well, I'm saying that for each getting one thing, I didn't know you were saying. So it's too bad, Alex.
Oh, so you
wasted yours like on a belt number two.
You get a belt, and you get a motorcycle.
You could probably like hijack someone's.
Yeah,
bike,
see, so. I can now hijack you when you're from your bike with my belt.
Can you run as fast as this motorcycle? Excuse me,
it's got a very particular skill.
Wait until you combine just. Flick it.
I think you can pedal it.
I'm like the Great Escape. You can't get me that way, man.
That's what it looks like. The Great Escape. The Steve McQueen.
I'll have my Mad Max like bike chain, like the one that weighs 80 pounds. I'll slap your leather against my tooled steel.
So explain to me what this means, because I saw this and I saw people going crazy about this. Apple has said they're going to eliminate the affiliate program from apps and in-app purchases on October 1st.
Yeah, I have so many feelings about this, Leo. So, I mean, Apple has always had an affiliate program. They originally had it for iTunes Music. It expanded to iTunes Movies and TV shows.
So, just to explain what that is, if I put a link to a song on my website that I really like, and it's a link back to Apple Music, I can get a percentage of that sale.
Yes, as long as you belong to the program. And the program was, you used to be outsourced, then Apple got their own program, and you'd get a specially crafted link. You'd have to go and make it. It wasn't quite as convenient as Amazon, but it was possible. And then you'd get a little bit of money. And it changed a lot over the years. For example, the window, like if you clicked a link and then you bought several things, you get referral fee for all of that. But the time of that window got shorter. Last year, famously, Apple was going to reduce the rates, and then they changed their minds, but still reduced the rates for in-app purchases. And now they're going to be eliminating the program entirely come October. And we used to be able to pay a full-time app editor off of the commission that we got off from affiliate, but that was in the heyday of apps, and it slowly atrophied over the years. So when this news came out, I went and asked the people who do that at Mobile Nations at iMore, and they're like, it barely registers anymore. And we've been running Android Central without any Google affiliate revenue ever. So it really, because some people panicked that it would suddenly mean that nobody would review apps anymore because there was no affiliate revenue. But Google sites have never gotten affiliate revenue, and they've run reviews just fine for years. But it really is, it's one of those things that it's so hard to exist in this medium, in this business. And every year you have to worry about Google changing the way that their algorithm works, and maybe your page views drop off. Amazon has changed affiliate revenues. They've removed people from the program, some quite famously, and then your revenue plummets. Like if that ever happened to Wirecutter, that's game over. And Apple's adjusted this. It's almost like Darth Vader saying, you know, pray I don't alter the bargain again. And you try to have enough of these little irons in the fire.
Pray I don't alter the bargain.
Exactly. You try to have enough of these. And for some sites, like Touch Arcade said, it's going to be devastating to them because they were still predominantly fed off of affiliate revenue. Most other sites moved off of it because, like I said, the bottom fell out years ago, primarily because
the app economy left premium apps. Almost nobody buys like upfront paid apps anymore. They get Netflix and there's a subscription, but you don't see any revenue from the subscription. You get a game that's free and then they buy in-app purchases, but they didn't click your link to get that in-app purchase ever. So you didn't get any revenue from that.
That's interesting. So the only way you'd get the revenue for the in-app purchase is if somehow
they did it like immediately after they downloaded the app, or you know, you linked. I don't even know if you can link.
It was 7%. I mean, that was a very good chunk of change.
Yes, except it was 7% of premium apps, of which almost nobody buys.
Those don't exist. And then they dropped the rate for in-app purchases to 2.5% last year,
which almost nobody converted on because nobody bought those purchases immediately.
So is that part of this? Is that Apple? By the way, it didn't cost Apple anything. They would just take it out of the 30%. Well, I guess it did, right?
They took it out of the 30%. Yeah.
Didn't cost the developer anything.
And also they had to administer it, which was an annoyance to them. But there's a bunch of theories. Some people think Apple's going to change the split for developers, and this is a way of minimizing the impact to Apple. I think that's incredibly optimistic at this point to sort of guess why Apple's doing it. Right. I just think that they saw almost no value in the program anymore. And there was two really bad things about it. One was that they did it right after announcing record-setting earnings, especially for the App Store and on the eve of becoming a trillion-dollar company.
Yeah.
And also the language they used was abysmal. Yeah. I can't believe anybody in corporate communications was involved with this because they're all decent folks. They would have flagged this immediately, but they basically made it sound like, okay, we know you put us through college, but now that we've graduated, we have a hotter, younger, better version of you, so bye. And that's just not the way you should ever talk to anybody who helped you build business.
The way they're saying, oh, well, we feel as though these personalized recommendations aren't necessary now that we have an app store that recommends apps by procedure. It's like, okay, I'm absolutely on Renee's side here. That's like the most tone deaf way to put it whatsoever. Because also there are a lot of people who just aren't developers. People that aren't really happy with the fact that you can sort of when users do a search for an app, you can buy search results and simply say whenever someone asks for Alex Lindsay's crazy awesome calculator app, I want you to insert results for Andy's kind of half arsed. Barely functional four function calculator, so that will appear in the search results for this popular app as well. So, but I would like to know why it was so important to cut off even this small amount of revenue from people. It would seem as though if it's not a whole lot of money, unless this program is costing Apple a whole lot of money to administrate it, you may as well just keep it going until your excuse is that affiliates just aren't taking advantage of this program anymore, and therefore we can't keep it running for the handful of people that are still using it.
So Touch Arcade was the one that was really upset, right?
Yeah, well, a lot of developers too, because a lot of developers would use the affiliate program as a way of taking. So there's no, in a lot of businesses, if you provide the direct referral, you don't pay as high a commission rate. But Apple, it's just the 30% for everybody. So they would get their own affiliate program, like sign up. They would provide the link on their page, then they would get 7% back. So instead of paying Apple 30% for the App Store cut, they would end up being like 23% was whatever the transactional changes were. And now that's gone for them too. So they're paying that 30% every time. And that's,
well, and it, you know, for, and it could have been,
they said Apple, it was a nice paycheck.
We haven't seen, of course, we don't have access to the back end, but it could have been that Apple realized that a vast majority of everyone that's getting checks from them are actually developers going, you know, putting that link on just to get another 7%, and just decided, well, let's get rid of it. Yeah. Rather than saying, oh, developers can't do that, they just said, you know, we're not going to, it's not worth it. We'll just cut it off. And there isn't that much money going out. Mm-hmm. There's probably a small number of people, Touch Arcade being one of them. I'm not saying that this lessens the impact on them, but
there may be a handful of sites that this is their chief source of revenue.
I asked around, and what I heard consistently from several people is that, Apple likes the program. They might bring it back one day, but when they were running the numbers, it's been for a couple of years. They've just been sustaining it because they thought they should sustain it, and it just didn't make financial sense for them going forward. And that to me is incomprehensible. But you know, none of these people are people who would just tell me a story. So I don't know what that looks like internally, but yeah.
It does kind of add some shading to this wonderful and really interesting news that, hey, Apple's a $1 trillion company, because whereas it might have been sort of irksome that, oh, well, they're canceling this program that helped a lot of very small people out, but wasn't really working out for Apple, or they've decided to stop giving you, including in the iPhone that doesn't have a headphone jack, they're going to stop packing in the adapter that might cost them 89 cents to put in there.
The extension cord and the Mac.
It would be irksome if they were simply making oil company level profits. But it's like, hey, you're a $1 trillion company, and you really can't give me this simple dongle to make my life a little bit easier.
They did. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that they did do is they took that extension cord out of the MacBook Pro. I just scavenged it old MagSafe adapter that I didn't need anymore. But
the point is, like, they didn't want to make the box bigger, which is a ludicrous thing. The way they think about it is, like, sometimes Apple just does stupid things, but sometimes it's just the thinking is really, it's like Apple does not culturally know how to run at a loss. Like the App Store, they were willing to have a subsistence, but they were worried that the free apps would cost more than they were bringing in. Ha ha. You look 10 years later, not even a concern, but they were legitimately worried that it would cost them money to run the App Store in the beginning. And they just can't culturally accept that even if they don't make money off the affiliate program, it's a nice thing to do. And, you know, they'll think about it for a while, but it's like, oh, it's costing us money. We don't run at a loss. Sorry.
Well, and also they don't run at a small profit. You know, they weren't losing money on the Airport Extreme, and they weren't losing money on a lot of other things.
No, with the iTunes was close. Like, they would sometimes pay more for a movie than they'd sell it for, but on average it would work out to zero, and they were fine with that. But under zero, they were not fine with it.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, there were a couple of stories about Apple Pay I dropped out when we were talking about Apple Pay. Chase ATMs are going to start using it. 16,000 Chase ATMs. Lisa's happy about that. I'm happy about that because we just moved our bank to Chase. So now we can use Apple Pay there. That's kind of cool.
Just remember that anytime you see these news items, it's great for everybody who's using contactless payments. It's never that Chase is exclusively using Apple Pay. Whenever you say Apple Pay, and the NFC implementation of it, you're also talking about Android Pay. You're also, as a matter of fact, the Chase ATMs will also work with Samsung Pay.
Oh, that's a good point. It's touch to pay, right? Yeah. That's a very good point. Although Consumer Reports says Apple Pay is the highest rated mobile peer-to-peer payment service. Now, this is not for paying things. This is for paying friends.
Right.
And they compared
splitting the check.
Yeah. They compared it to Venmo, Cash, Facebook, and Zelle, which is the bank app. And it's kind of way in the lead on that one. 76 compared to 69 for Venmo, 64 for Cash, 63 for Facebook, and 50 for Zelle. And they're based on payment authentication, which is as high as it can get for Apple Pay. Data security, also very high. Data privacy, as high as it can get. Everything else, by the way, in data privacy is a red downward arrow, except for Apple Pay. customer support, they say Venmo's a little better there, as is Zelle, and broad access. Apple Pay is fairly low because, of course, you have to have an iPhone or an Apple Watch to use Apple Pay. But they do call it the digital standard. So Apple Pay also may start to become – that's a fairly new feature in Apple Pay, the peer-to-peer payment solution.
Yeah, and it's only in the U.S. still, I think.
Oh, is it? You can't do it?
Apple Pay Cash, yeah.
Oh, too bad, because I was going to send you some money. Maybe it's one other
country. Well, Andy's bike, now this.
Let's take a break, because I don't know about you guys, but I need some coffee and olive oil.
I'm drinking, Leo? Did you guess what I'm drinking?
Olive oil?
No, I'm drinking coffee.
Are you drinking Tres Pontas?
I am. It is más inteligente, más fuerte, invincible.
Now you're going to feel terrible because I'm breaking out the crostini.
We
decided to do all demos today. We brought out the crostini and the
now you know what it was like when those cupcakes are there and you're cupcake tag nabbit.
So the same folks, interesting. The same folks who bring us Tres Pontas coffee, which is just as you say, fabulous coffee. They realize, you know, there are a lot of these single family products that are gourmet quality. Maybe we should expand a little bit. They went over to Chile and they found the Casablanca Valley, one of the few valleys in Chile, perfect for growing olive oil. Basically, it's the same climate as Greece and Italy. And, you know, I don't know if you saw recently, it was a 60 Minutes report, an Italian olive oil from other countries that is being adulterated with canola oil and other stuff.
Yep.
Terrible. In fact, I stopped buying Italian olive oil because I just didn't know if I could trust it. Tres Pontes olives are picked in Jose Miguel's orchard. There's Jose Miguel holding the olives. They use five varietals. If you're an olive guy, you'll recognize Frantoio, Arbequina, Lechino, Croatina, and Arbosana olives. They use natural pressure, no heat, no chemicals, to extract them, and you're getting the first press, which means it is the most delicious. First of all, look how green this is. It's so beautiful. It is so flavorful. And there's something else that you might be interested in with olive oil, acidity. First press, they allow the acidity, I think, to go up to 6 or 7%. And you'll notice this. You'll get some extra virgin olive oil, and it's got a tangy, acidic flavor to it. Tres Pontes Evo is less than 0.2% in every bottle. Fabulous. For cooking, for just dipping your bread into this. We sent you a bottle, right, Alex? Did you get yours?
Yeah. You gave me one on air, and I have to admit, before I left, I'm in D.C. right now, before I left, I told Carlita, I was like, you know, you can't cook with that. That's my olive oil. Like it's too good to be like just cooking with it.
Well,
it needs to be dipped.
You know what? It's so affordable. You can cook with it. In fact,
I just didn't.
But think about it. Everything tastes better when you use the better olive oil in it.
I
make popcorn with this stuff.
I just decided to try it as a salad dressing, nothing else on it.
Oh, isn't that good?
And just like I didn't make anything else. Just like I'm just going to put this on some spinach leaves, and oh my goodness!
No, I hadn't identified. We're switching over. I mean, that's all.
Oh, I've switched.
But
yeah, absolutely.
We're just finishing off the stuff that's there and cooking. But I was like, I'm not sure where to buy it, so I don't want to run out.
I can help you with this. I'm glad you asked. Before I tell you where you get it, though, let me show you this. This is really cool. Just like the Tres Pontes coffee, this was such a hit, they decided to put the QR code of where the olives are from on the back of the bottle. So you just put your phone next to the QR code, and you'll get a link to Google Maps, and you can literally see the olive tree. There it is, right there. That's the actual grove that this olive oil came from. There is, I mean, talk about incredible. And I should point out, as you know, Alex, we live in olive country. There are some very good olive oils here. This is better than the gourmet, expensive olive oil that we get just down the road. It is the least acidic. They guarantee the acidity is less than 0.2% in every bottle. 0.2% in every bottle. It is smooth. It is fresh. No bitter aftertaste. This is the highest quality olive oil I've ever tasted. You'll want to use it all the time, and you can get it. You can get a subscription if you want. That's what I would do. Get it sent to you every 1 or 2 or 4 weeks. Free shipping in the U.S. So what you can do, just as with the coffee. In fact, you could, by the way, mix and match if you want, and get the 5-liter bottle, Alex, and you'll never run out. But do you see that price? Uh-huh. Take 20% off, because here's what we're going to do. When you go to trespontes.com/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak, you'll get an extra 10% off. So it's 10% off for subscribing, 10% off because you use the code MacBreak. That's 20% off, and that applies to the coffee as well as the olive oil. So you can put together a little package for yourself or your family or your friends. I'm going to send this to my mom because she loves to cook, and she loves good olive oil. And, you know, I remember when I was growing up, there was always a can of olive oil, of Italian olive oil in the stove, because that's all she would ever cook with, yep, right next to the stove. And, lately, because of that 60 Minutes piece, I said, I'm not going to buy that anymore. Where can I get good olive oil? This is where. Trespontes.com/MacBreak. 20% off if you subscribe and use the offer code MacBreak. I just wish you guys were here, because this is fun.
Hey, We have a kind bar. That's all we got.
You're going to eat bar. One of those little crappy energy bars. That's all you got?
That's all we got. I didn't want to be left out. It's not the same.
I am kind of an olive oil connoisseur because I grew up on it. So is Lisa, because she won't do vinegar on her salad. She only does olive oil. And when we were in Paris it was London at a hotel, and they had some French olive oil, and we started buying that because it was so good. This is better. This is the best I've ever had, and the price is right, especially when you take that 20% discount. Trace,
Haley, if you're in Petaluma, if you go to Port Works and get their Sonomic Red, and you just drop a little of that into the
that sounds good. Is that a vinegar or is it port?
It's kind of halfway in between, and it is. You'll go through the bread really fast. That's all.
Yeah, that's the only problem with that.
Yeah, it's like oh.
T-R-E-S, like the number three, Tres Pontas, P-O-N-T-A-S. It comes from the mountain where the coffee comes from in Brazil. 3 points. TresPontas.com/MacBreak. TresPontas.com/MacBreak. And just to celebrate, I'm having a little Tres Pontas coffee too. Safari, I'm stunned to read this, leads in mobile web traffic, not desktop, of course, but mobile web traffic, even beating Chrome, which is the default browser on Android, and even beating Facebook, although Facebook is gaining on Chrome. It's the top three browsers on mobile are Safari, Chrome, Facebook, and Facebook's about to go to number two. This comes from Mixpanel.
I think a lot of that has to do with, I don't know very many Apple or iPhone users that use anything other than Safari.
You don't have really much of a choice. It's always the default, right? So,
it's the default, and it's also just, you just don't think about it. It's so tied into everything that Apple does. It's the same way, like, I still use Google Maps, but, you know, the vast majority of iPhone users just use Apple Maps because that's what came with it. And when they click on it, it takes them to that link. And that's the power of the platform.
The tyranny of the default is sometimes the
same. Are they smart enough to know to separate out browsers that present as Safari?
I hope they are, because you're right. A lot of browsers, there's a...
Safari presents as Mozilla as a backup, but a lot of the browsers...
Yeah. There's a user agent string that when queried, the browser... Actually, it doesn't even have to be queried. The browser actually sends as part of the packet. And it can say anything. And as you point out, sometimes it says the wrong thing. So that may be the only information they have. I don't know. They do say... this is all, again, Mixpanel. The current split of phones in the U.S., this is also fascinating, 65% iOS... 35% Android. It's actually 65.5 to 34.5. So if I add those together, there is point. that's 100.101%. So I think there's no room for third party devices. The mobile market is dominated by iOS, 65.5%.
In the US of A.
In the US. It's completely, it's very actually different. Flipped in the rest of the world. But in the U.S.,
I mean, one of the metrics I think is usually better is the amount of e-commerce transactions that go through Safari. I think those are usually inordinately high as well.
Apple people buy more stuff, right?
Yeah,
always been the story.
You have to take all. Nobody knows except for Apple and Google, and they don't really tell us those fine-grained numbers. All you can do is take a bunch of different people. Feeling up different parts of the elephant to try to get a clear picture of what the animal looks like.
It would be totally possible for a website to ask more than just the user agent string to determine if it was Safari.
Totally.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm hoping Mixpanel is being smarter and doing it right. I imagine they are, but I don't know. So did you see the leaks in iOS 12's beta?
And then everybody and their YouTuber got a dummy unit yesterday, so...
Who'd that come from?
The same place it always comes from. Same person it always comes from every year.
Oh, I got that too.
Bless him.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. He sent me one too.
Nice.
So that's just based on the icon?
So what happened, there's so much money involved in the accessory ecosystem, and a lot of these factories are very close together in China that inevitably somebody manages to bribe somebody to get the schematics, and then they produce these dummy units, which are as close and as accurate as possible
to what, like, they're not functional. They're not an actual iPhone.
Are these for case makers and people like
that?
Yeah,
they're for case makers and other accessory makers. And then some of them get sold on the, you know, on the market, and people pick them up and, you know, redistribute them to YouTubers or to blogs or those kind of things.
Okay. So they're being like 3D printed.
Actually, I mean, they're often accurate. They're not always. Last year, there was that whole thing about the rear touch ID sensor that was on a bunch of models that never showed up in the real world, and Apple said they never built.
I actually didn't get it. Somebody offered it to me, and I haven't said yes because I don't know what I would do with it. But there is the dummy, somebody else holding the dummy.
Yeah, and a bunch of what videos went up yesterday. It was almost like it was embargo day for iPhone.
iPhone dummies. So what do we learn from this? And also, there's an iPad icon in iOS 12, right, too. Yeah.
So. Apple, yeah, we're talking, yeah. In addition to the whatever dummies that we're gotten from case makers, we're talking about the usual source of someone decided to go surfing all the way through the binaries of an upcoming release, and they saw an icon of a device that doesn't look like an iPhone 10, and they also found icons of an iPad device that you would say, this is can't possibly be an iPad. It has such slim bezels and no home key. Mm. Unless you were to conclude that, oh, well, perhaps that's what the next iPad is going to look like.
This has worked in the past with the iPhone 10 and the HomePod. So this is not completely, it's not voodoo. The icon's name is HLS iPad 2 compared to the similar icon HLS iPad.
It's a transaction symbol. I think it's from the Apple Pay subsystem.
Okay. And so it's home buttonless. It's got much smaller bezels. But this is what we all figured was going to happen, right?
Yes. Yeah. These all confirm every rumor that we've seen for the last umpteen months.
Yeah.
This is what you expect. We're what? Less than a month away. Well, actually, we're not less than a month. If they do it, don't they usually do it the Tuesday, the week following Labor Day?
It's usually a Tuesday in September. Yeah, it depends exactly on when it lands.
Labor Day is September 3rd, so September 11th would normally, because they don't want to do it right after Labor Day.
Sometimes they do. I mean, but it's definitely in that vicinity. At least it has been in all for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years.
But as you have pointed out, because Apple has their own facility now, and they don't have to book these months ahead of time, they have some flexibility this year.
You also imagine they like to stay away from that particular date.
Totally.
The 10th or the 12th.
But they also, they need some time for ramp up. So they have the event, and then usually that Friday they go on pre-order 10 days, or what is it? The next Wednesday iOS comes out, and then the Friday they become available in stores. So depending on when you actually want to launch the thing, you have to have the event with enough time in between to handle all that.
Somebody had an event on September 11th. Was it Samsung? I remember an event on September 11th. And you would think that people would want to stay away from that.
Yeah.
Certainly Apple. I think Apple's very sensitive to that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So we don't know. But we are. The point being, we are roughly a month away from a likely announcement. And do you think it will be iPad and iPhone? We talked about this last week. You still think it'll be all together?
There was a school of thought that Apple didn't want to minimize iPhone by sharing the stage with a lot of other things. And then we had the September event 2 years ago where there was like 4 or 5 things all announced at the same time, the new Apple TV and the new iPad Pro, the first iPad Pro and the iPhone and the new Apple Watch. And so they're obviously not adverse to doing that. So if it makes a lot of sense for them not to have to hold 2 events, people not to have to travel for 2 events, if everything is ready to show off, I think that's probably their preference.
And then you mentioned this rumor that the iPhone 2018 iPhone, according to Barclays Research, will no longer have the little adapter that goes from Lightning to 3.5 millimeter headphone jack.
Yeah, I think they should be adding those adapters to other products, not taking them away from this one.
Yeah,
yeah.
It costs $9 if you buy it from Apple.
Probably costs like insignificant.
And I have it costs 27 to 36 because that's how many you need floating around. So when you forget one, you have another one.
I did.
Bag.
I saturated the house with them. I bought so many of them. Yeah.
Now I will admit that after a lot of resistance, the thing I use most of the time now is my AirPods. You know, I mean, they become just what I'm using every day.
But that's because you're forced into it.
No, I have the adapter, and I have some Edemotics that I have sitting with me that I, you know, they're on my desk almost all the time. That's what I used to wear all the time. And when I'm on conference calls, I often still put them on because the mic is a little bit better. But the AirPods, when you get used to not having the cables, I will admit, like, working out is amazing. You go to the gym. I mean, the gym isn't very busy where I work out. And so you just set it somewhere in the middle of the gym. I set my phone somewhere in the middle of the gym, and then I just wander around working out. And it's I've gotten tangled up with my headphones many, many times in my little career of lifting. And so it's really nice just to have headphones and you're just wandering about. Yeah.
It's so funny to see a muscle-bound guy like Alex all taught up in the headphones. He's going like, ah! It's so fun. I'm going to miss that, Alex.
Yeah, I haven't been muscle bound for a long time. I try. I work at it. But muscle bound has not been my problem.
Not since Nab started urine testing before the show starts.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, it's not steroids. It's PEDs. That's all I'm saying. Supplement. My doctor said it was good for my knee.
It's an enhancement.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if this will affect the shipping of the new iPhone or iPad, but TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, shut down over the weekend, last weekend, saying a computer virus hit its fabrication tools on Friday evening. 80% have now been restored as of yesterday, but that means delayed shipments to customers. TSMC builds what, the memory in the iPhone? What do they build?
No, they do they will be doing the A12 processor.
Oh boy. Oh, that's not good. Of course, a 2 or 3 day delay right now probably really isn't good for the iPhone.
It really depends. It's hard. Like Kim Cook always says, one bit of information is hard to extrapolate. We don't know how far ahead they were. We don't know if this will affect initial supply or their ability to meet, channel inventory, or if they had enough already stockpiled that it's only going to be a problem if they can't fill in the gap now. It's really hard to say, but obviously it's not going to.
It's not going to affect the announcement or the time we buy. I mean, we all know that there's going to be a delay. It just means that a certain number of people are going to get you are now 2 or 3 weeks rather than you are now 2 or 3 days. I don't think that being down for 2 days is really going to affect any of us.
It is kind of a cautionary tale for all of us, though. This is something that's happened to so many businesses. They got bit by WannaCry, the ransomware, according to the CEO.
Obviously, they are not built running their production company on the Mac.
An unidentified vendor provided the company with an infected tool and software tool, and they installed it on whatever, obviously not Macintosh-based controller.
I have a feeling somebody, if somebody isn't ribbing the CEO of somebody else over the fact that they went down,
Well, it's probably those fab machines, probably. Who knows what they run, but it's probably some.
Was it a tool related to chip fabrication, or was it a pirated version of, like, Overwatch or something?
That's really why they shut down. They wanted 3 days to play Fortnite. That's exactly what's going on.
Exactly.
According to Bloomberg, TSMC is, quote, expected to be able to fill all orders on time for Apple. So that's
for Apple.
For Apple.
The rest of you will have to wait.
You're out of luck. Yeah. It helps to be the biggest customer of a company like TSMC. Apple is accepting Red Cross donations. You may have seen that for wildfires in California. These Northern California wildfires are about 100 miles north of us, but it is now the largest wildfire ever in California history, up in Mendocino. I'm sure those Red Cross donations will be very much welcome. So when you see that little pop-up in your iTunes, you might consider coughing up a little something-something. I'll tell you who will not be coughing up a little something-something. The folks who do Fortnite have decided not to put it in the Google Play Store. It's coming to Android soon. They make a lot of money on Apple, about $150 million a day. That means Apple makes a third of that, $50 million, unless they're cutting a deal. These are all in-app purchases. Tim Sweeney, the CEO of Epic, says, we're not going to do that on Google Play. And it's kind of controversial because in order to sideload a game on Google Play, you have to turn off the third-party protection. Yeah. Android, much like Apple, unless you turn off that setting, will only allow you to download apps from the Google official Google store. But unlike Apple, they have a switch in settings that let you disable that. I think on modern Android devices, it's a one-time disabling. So it comes back on after you download whatever that was that you wanted.
Unless you want to download it again. And then, I mean, it just seems so ill-advised and not really in the best interest of customers or users.
Yeah, and it's also taking a chance because it does make it that much harder to get it.
I think Russell Holley made this point. Like when Pokemon was available, in one region, people rushed to download bootleg versions, half of which had malware installed. And when it's not coming through the store, you have no protection against that. There's going to be a bunch of people putting up fake APK mirrors and loading with who knows what, and people are going to download it because they're desperate to get Fortnite.
I'm sure Sweeney would have done the same thing with the iPhone, but you don't have the option on the iPhone.
You'd have to do enterprise, and it's just so much overhead.
Yeah. Oh, so you can do it as like an enterprise app sideload.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you can create almost like the way a corporation would distribute apps to its own customers, but there's just so much overhead that it's probably not worth it for them.
Yeah. Apple has, this is a tricky one, so I'll just say it. Apple has banned InfoWars from the podcast directory. Actually, they still sell the info or allow the InfoWars app on the App Store. It's a free one. But they are removing InfoWars, most of the InfoWars podcasts from the iTunes directory, following in the lead of Spotify and others who have decided to pull Alex Jones's inflammatory.
They fast followed. So they were all, I forget, it was Charlie Wetzel who was covering it. And he said, I was talking to YouTube and Facebook and all these companies, and they hemmed and hawed for months. And then Apple, apparently Eddie Q and Tim Cook discussed it over the weekend. Apple made a decision, and then everybody except for Twitter fell in line immediately after that.
And they made the decision, it says, to drop from the podcast. This is Apple Insiders. Drop it from the podcast, but not from the App Store. Why is that?
Yeah, I think that came from Pacific. Because they didn't believe that it violated the terms of the App Store. Although the way I read them, the terms in the App Store are not significantly, or not at least realistically, different than the terms of the podcast app. So I think that, you know, if you can argue that they violate one, they should violate the other.
I feel as though it's because in the podcast store, you have an Apple app that's rendering hateful text in the form of the description of what the episode is about, whereas you can have a little bit of a distance and say that, well, we're just providing an app. It's the app that is telling people these horrible, horrible things about contrails and fake, unquote, school shootings and stuff like that. But yeah, there's always been a little bit of a division between content that's available through the App Store and content that's available through the iTunes Store and podcasts that I don't.
Usually the other way.
There's just not a whole lot of consistency. There have been times where they've banned simple reference apps because you could access a naughty word through a Wikipedia app. However, these same naughty words are okay in explicit tagged songs. So it's weird.
That was kind of the old days, right? Though, haven't they fixed? Isn't it more consistent now, or is it not?
It's still case by case.
Far less often.
Yeah, exactly. I still think that content approval is still very much a handcrafted, hand tooled, artisanal process at Apple. Where it's not. Well, I mean, in the sense that there are rules, but it depends on the circumstances under which someone is reviewing those rules and who gets bit by them and who gets to slide through them. So there are always going to be apps that should have been banned but will go through until Apple catches the mistake 2 years later. And there are always going to be apps that really should have been approved immediately but get banned and the developer never really finds out. So it's not a tragedy of Apple, but it's hard to decide that there is a consistent set of rules for why Apple does one thing for one store or one piece of content and a different one for a different one.
I am obviously not a fan of InfoWars, but it does make me a little queasy.
I think that even Mark Zuckerberg was touching on this when he was talking about Nazis and whether they should be on
Facebook. This is the quandary that Facebook faces. And I think they finally got rid of InfoWars on Facebook, but they still have a lot of other, you know, hateful content.
They got rid of four or five pages that Alex Jones. So the thing is that, like, there's a lot of
there's huge value in having the discussion, because you don't want to err too far in one way. You don't want to be, but there are lines. Like, for example, all of these places, let me back up for a second. There's no freedom of speech argument here, because there's no freedom of speech on somebody else's dime. These are public companies. These are not governments. There's no censorship, because no government is ordering them to take these down. They're doing this as editorial decisions. It's like you get to control what is on the shelves of your bookstore, what is on the shelves of your retail store. That's your decision to make, as long as you don't violate any laws in doing it. And also, I mean, this there are laws of different countries that take effect here. So you can't just have a U.S. view on this, because anything you allow or don't allow the U.S. to do, you allow or don't allow China to do. And that's just how these things work. But we have lines. For example, they don't allow porn on almost any of these stores. And people will say, well, I absolutely know what that is. But sometimes there's arguments over male versus female nipples, or whether you can have a shot of someone breastfeeding or not. Right. We have huge arguments about that.
It's tricky. And it's very difficult.
Yeah. And it's fair to expand that to other content types. And Apple does list a variety of things, including, like, you can't show murder on any of these things.
And I should say it's not a First Amendment issue, because the First Amendment protects you against government intervention. Yes. Any private business can do whatever it wants.
And Apple's a public company, but a private business, because people get confused about that too.
Yeah. Public company just means there's public shareholders. Doesn't mean it's a government thing.
And I think what a lot of these folks are trying to traipse around also is becoming liable for making decisions in general. So as they start to say, we're going to take this content out, then people are going to say, well, you need to start making decisions all the time.
Yeah, that's the slippery
slope. You could be sued.
Yeah.
Or you could be sued if this was put on. You know, it opens them up to all kinds of lawsuits, you know, and that's so a lot of them are like, I don't know if we should do that. And I think that they got to a point with him that they decided that he just wasn't, that it was worth the trouble.
But also I think there's a cultural problem that has to be overcome with companies like Facebook and Twitter. Historically, from the very, very get-go, they have been under the classic initial internet model, which says that all we're doing is we're providing servers and software so that people can publish their own opinions. It is not our legal or moral responsibility to control what that speech is. And the digital communications, copyright.
DCMA.
DMCA. In a sense, sort of tells them that you are explicitly not editors like a newspaper. You are simply providing a hosting service. So it's not just a legal thing. It's that they have built these organizations around the idea that we are hands off. Not as an altruistic thing, but that this is not a product that we have, or an infrastructure that we have ever built this thing to do. And so they have a responsibility to control some of the speech. And now that they have to really make these things happen within a very short period of time, they are very much fumbling, because once again, you're trying to take a gasoline powered car and make it run on electricity. It was never built with the anticipation that it would ever have to have this fundamental character installed inside it. And so they need to be held responsible. They need to get there. But it's going to take a couple of years for them to figure out exactly how to redefine themselves as people who are constantly taking a look at the content that's being processed through their servers, and making sure that nothing harmful, or nothing that is objectively, and you have to use air quotes around objectively harmful, is used through their service.
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
there has to be a line, but we have to argue ferociously and passionately
all the time
to make sure that it doesn't go too far either way.
Yeah. Mm. Fair enough. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about before we back out of this show here? French lawmakers banning smartphones for kids under 15 in schools.
Good luck.
Skype is back. Microsoft has backtracked and said, all right, we'll let you keep using classic. They call it classic Skype for a while. Skype, I guess, 7, then went to Skype 8.
Skype non-electron. It's like with the escape bar.
I'm amazed at how Microsoft was able to take a mediocre, slightly below average, software and just keep going down.
Make it worse. Skype right now. It's amazing. It works great.
Oh, my gosh. It's like every time you get
here's the deal: is that when Apple and oftentimes Google, like when there's an update, you're excited about what's going to happen next. When you find out there's going to be a Skype update, every single time you're like,
yes,
I don't.
It's terrifying. I just want it to be a stable platform. Yeah.
I wanted to.
Because we rely on it. That's the program we use more than any other. Yeah. On Twitter.
I wanted to do a screen share the other day with somebody, and I opened it up, and I couldn't find screen share in the new version. I was like, I can't find screen share. So I closed it. I opened Hangouts. I sent another link. Boom. Okay, we're done. You know, like I was just, you know, like, and it worked fine. And I think that is that's not a good thing for Microsoft. For me to just, you know, very quickly just move on. Because now it is easy. Whether I'm going to Zoom or Hangouts or whatever, you really have to decide whether, you know, Skype makes sense. And I still don't know where screen sharing went.
I'm just amazed that Microsoft thought they would have any luck in trying to get people to stop using an obsolete and dangerous and inferior old copy of their code, given that there's still how many copies of Windows XP and critical installations still running?
Right. Yeah.
Government of Quebec is still on like Windows 2000, I think.
Are you using somewhere? I'm sure you are.
Very, very wealthy household.
I'm sure somewhere you are, Renee, using the beta of Mojave, right?
Yes.
You like it? Is it stable? Going well?
Yeah. It's been really, really good. I mean, the only problem I've had is that Google Hangouts hasn't been working on it, so I've been using a High Sierra machine for that, but everything else has been working fine.
How's Skype working on it? Pretty good?
Yeah, Skype's been working. Everything. Google Hangouts is like a remarkable program. On High Sierra, the camera stopped working for like 3 months, and now on Mojave, just the whole thing doesn't work. The audio stopped working. It sounds like a robot. But yeah, everything else has been great.
So I don't know if you've seen this. This, I guess, showed up in beta 6. The new migration assistant has an extra little button there. Look at that. How do you want to transfer your information from a Mac, Time Machine backup, or startup disk from a Windows PC?
Yep.
Ooh. There's a little shot across the bow at Redmond there. So this is going to be more capable in terms of importing stuff from Windows.
Yeah, I wish Bertrand Soulier was still around to announce this because he would have done a bang-up job on stage.
Yeah. Microsoft Outlook, other accounts. I don't know. Probably nobody's daring to use it at this point.
It's everything your Mac can understand, so that if you can type it in manually on your Mac, this just helps you by pulling it straight from the Windows machine. Nice. So that, like, it won't give you things that don't exist on the Mac, obviously, but it will take things like Outlook that you can actually enter into your accounts tab on System Preferences and do that for you.
Good. Anything else?
I don't even use Migrate from the Mac.
No, I always start clean. I think it's just
easier.
Yeah,
me too. I just want to start. Yeah, that's a bad idea.
I have everything. Like, my whole documents directory is in Dropbox now. So I just open up a machine, install Dropbox. All my documents are there, and I don't want the cruft that's built up.
Yeah, I don't use Dropbox for that. I use my Synology NAS. But that's one of the best things in the world is I have a 3 GB documents folder, and it just propagates to every machine I install. Takes a little while to download it all because it's downloading from my house. But it's sure nice to have because then I don't have to worry about backup, really. Although, I love this. On this new MacBook Pro, I decided, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more careful about it. I got one of those Samsung T5 drives, the little portable drives, and super duper set it up super duper. Anytime you see that drive, just make sure that it's duplicate the internal and the external. And so I just periodically just plug it in. Thunderbolt 3 now. And very quickly, within half an hour, I've got a bootable backup on an external drive. I really like that. Jailbreak for Apple Watch. How exciting.
Just what I want.
Apple Watch, it does not have an easy user restart button, so I would be
incredibly hesitant. Do not do this.
But it's worth it to be able to finally play Doom
on my watch.
No, I mean, there is a huge argument to be made that Apple should allow UIKit apps on the Apple Watch, especially as the performance increases. Yes, you'll have to pay a battery fine, but Apple's apps are UIKit. They're not, you know, WatchKit the way that third-party apps are. I get all that. I just don't think people outside like Steve Trotten Smith should be playing with that stuff.
This would be it is on GitHub if you want. TIHMSTAR. Jailbreak time, it's called.
Yeah. I mean, I doubt they're going to deliver anything to the watch that you'd want to have a part of. But it is significant that any time that a iOS device is jailbroken, it means that somebody was able to exploit some sort of security that was in there to prevent people from putting their own code on the device.
It exploits a kernel using something called Vortex.
If anything else, this is an alarm that Apple is going to have to address something, and I'm sure we'll see an update soon enough.
It's a service. Some hacker that's having fun rather than the NSA.
That's it. You know, when I was caught twisting doorknobs on my campus late at night on labs, that's what I said. I'm just testing to see which doors which locks are faulty.
It's pen testing. You'll know about it in about 10 years.
Exactly.
Yeah. Have you tried the new Apple Music Friends mix?
I haven't had a chance to try it yet.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people have been following me, and I was wondering why. I guess it must be this. I don't know. So you're basically, it's a mix based on the people you're following, your friends' profiles, or what? Updates on Mondays, favorites mix updates on Tuesdays, new music mix on Fridays, the chill mix on Sundays. So get your mixes, kids. Friends, I have to try that. I haven't seen that.
Well, I think the thing that I turned off in Spotify almost immediately is show everybody what I'm
really?
To.
What are you hiding?
Yeah, like I don't want to. I just don't want people to know how much I like Katy Perry.
It's so funny because it's exactly what I don't want people to know.
I want to give you the strength to be your true self. I will tell you right here, right now, that I on my wake up in the morning sort of action that's on my Google Assistant includes a playlist that includes Dancing Queen by ABBA, You Should Be Dancing by the Bee Gees, and It's Raining Men by the Weather Girls.
Wow.
Because these are the songs that get my butt out of bed. And yes, Frugging and Boogaloo.
It's Raining Men.
I'm proud. I'm proud of that.
So I think everyone watch what I listen to when I'm in the gym. I think that they would think there was something very wrong with it. It's all angry music. Very angry, very it's like Rage Against the Machine and all this other stuff. And I was like, I don't know if I need people to listen to that. You need to be aggro
if you're going to be pumping that iron.
That same playlist contains one of my favorite Devo songs since I was a kid. And whereas apparently when I was 16 years old in high school, I can be singing along to the lyrics. I'm a man with a mission, a boy with a gun. I've got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one who doesn't know I'm a big mess.
Oh, boy.
However, in 2018,
that's
I was
a different meaning, doesn't it?
That's not that loud. That's
so it's
not in the traditionalist, but.
I listened to a lot of Devo as a kid.
Yeah. Is that okay? I thought it was a Hillary Duff song. I'm sorry. In the For You section, you get your mixes, right? So I'm looking at For You. There's the favorites mix. There's the chill mix. The new music mix. Where's my friends mix, man? I can see what friends are listening to. You guys have terrible taste. But and some recommended friends who I don't know. I don't see the Friends Mix yet, but I guess maybe next Monday I'll get it. All right. I like Apple Music, I have to say.
So yeah.
I don't know, you know, I have them all, and I can't decide which I'm going to end up with. So
I had a chance today. Apple Music Beats One was actually in Montreal for the Oshaga Festival.
Oh, fun.
I got to interview one of the
Did you meet Juliette Danuga? I love Juliette
Wilkins.
Oh, Matt, all right.
Okay. He was awesome. And they were just – what I didn't realize, and I started to find out with the HomePod, but really when I talked to Matt, is that Apple Music, they don't just like play the music. They actually go to almost every region, every location. They have editors in cities whose only job it is to find and break new music. And they work with the talent. They try to encourage them. They try to help them get, you know, popular. And it's really a cool thing for music because they're at all the festivals talking to the new acts. And they knew all about like the acts from like Sudbury, Ontario, and London.
That's
and,
really
like,
cool. Small actually, parts that's of really Montreal. Good. They go take to the it clubs. Seriously. How much do you think they make? They must make a lot of money to be an Apple Beats DJ.
I don't know how much the DJs make, but like the music stuff, because they're getting like the small end off the percentage. It's not anywhere nearly as much as what sales used to be. But I think it's a huge differentiator to again increase the value of having an iPhone because you can get like Apple Music and all the stuff with it. So it's like making your own silicon. It's wise to invest in it because it increases the overall value of your product.
Right. My favorites mix, it really does reflect poorly on me. Madonna, Gang Bang, Lady Gaga, The Fame, Jonathan Colton, Curl, Matchbox 20, Real World, Bruno Mars, When I Was Your Man, Beyonce, Naughty Girl, Rihanna, Kiss It Better, Neil Young, Mr. Soul. You should never have Rihanna next to Neil Young. I'm sorry.
I will not listen to you playlist shame yourself, Leo.
I am shamed. I don't know where they get this stuff.
Yeah. You should be dancing.
You should be dancing. Will. Yeah. Pentagon.
Where's the Roger Whittaker?
There's a ship lies. No. You're going to get Andy and me doing our.
Oh, you are beautiful. For I have loved you dearly. More dearly than the spoken.
I'm going to write a letter. Dear Mr. Cook, your recent favorites mix did not include any Roger Whittaker. I don't understand it. All right. Pentagon bans, finally, geolocation services on iPhones, Apple Watch. You can still have an Apple Watch. You just have to turn off the geolocation services. This is finally. This comes from way back when Strava, and then more recently, what was the app that was giving away information about location?
Was it Strava?
Strava was the first one. That was in January, and then there was one last month.
It's not a good idea.
Yeah, you'd think operational OPSEC would require that you not be doing that. Effective immediately, Defense Department personnel are prohibited from using geolocation features and functionality on government and non-government issued devices, applications, and services while in locations designated as operational areas. So people were really blaming the apps, but I think it's probably safe to say this is a good policy.
I think that it was like a general saw that and just said, they're doing what?
What?
I think they need to stop doing that.
Can I write me a memo?
Rule that says don't wear a GPS. Don't wear a tracker of all of your data positions. While you're,
really? Have you heard about a concept called roadside bomb? How would they know where to put them? Because you've been tracking them and leaving a big map around.
All right, gentlemen, would you please prepare your picks because we are going to take a break, and then the picks of the week coming up. Momentarily, this episode of Mac Break Weekly. So let's see. I've done demos of the slide belt. I did a demo of the nice Tres Puentes olive oil. I think this means I need to buy a house now.
Buy a house.
Let's just buy a house on the air to demonstrate how easy it is, how relaxing it is with Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans very much spends time thinking about the user experience, the customer experience. That's what's made them the best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, 8 years running. Also number one in volume. And now they want to underscore that Rocket Mortgage is doing more to make the experience better. Lately, interest rates have started to tick up in the United States, and that's definitely a cause for anxiety. You're out house hunting, and you think to yourself, man, if I take another day, interest rate could go up by a quarter point. That's tens of thousands of dollars over the life loan. That's terrible. That puts pressure on you, and you don't want pressure. This is the most important purchase you'll ever make, the biggest check you'll ever write. So Quicken Loans says, all right, we can make this easier with the power buying process. It all starts, as always, with Rocket Mortgage, the entirely online mortgage approval process. You answer a few simple questions. They have trusted relationships with all the financial institutions. With your permission, they get everything they need to know, and then based on your income, assets, and credit, they'll show you the loans that are right for you. They give you qualified approval within 10 minutes. And then within less than a day, less than 24 hours, verified approval. By the way, verified approval is the bee's knees, as Grandpa would say. It basically says you've got the money. It makes you effectively a cash buyer. And in today's seller's market, it's great when you're going in, you're bidding against people. You want to be the one who says, I've already got the loan. I've got verified approval. Now, once you're verified, you qualify for the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. That means you have up to 3 months to find the right house without any fear of the rate going up. It will not. It cannot go up. Even if rates are going up, your rate stays the same. And everybody, when I say that, they say, well, what if they go down? Yeah, they go down. And then your rate goes down. Either way, you win. They just won't raise the rate. They will lower it. They will not raise it. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. Take the anxiety out of buying a home. Make it the fun process. It ought to be. It really is fun. Once you got the money, go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Get started right now. rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Rate shield approval is only valid in certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. All this based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. The all-new rate shield approval from Rocket Mortgage at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. You better believe, if I were about to buy a house, first place I'd go. Do it on your phone, your tablet, your PC. It's easy. It's fast. RocketMortgage.com/MacBreak. We thank Rocket Mortgage and Quicken Loans for making MacBreak Weekly possible. Alex, Lindsay, let's get your pick of the week.
So I had like a little odyssey this weekend trying to figure out how to get Illustrator, how to create my own shapes in Keynote. So what I wanted to do is actually, you know, Keynote's got a lot of great shapes that it comes with, but I want to put my logo in there and I want to put other things in there so that when I'm building Keynote docs, I can just drag them in. And you can have my shapes. You can take a shape and then edit it and then put it back in and it'll show up at the bottom under my shapes. I wish you could reorder that, but that's a whole other story. So the key was, how do I get my logo into Keynote so it's there all the time? I don't have to figure out where to import it or how to use it. And then it became, how do I bring in all these icons that I want to use all the time for the kind of keynotes that I build? So turns out it's not simple. If you take an Illustrator file and you just cut and paste it, you know, an EPS file or PDF and cut and paste it into Keynote, it doesn't know what to do with that. It does, it'll show up, but you can't go into you can't go in and say, make this a shape. What you need to do is convert it to a Keynote doc. And so there is there's a geeky little app or a geeky little website. It is Christian Holtz, who is probably going to be surprised by the amount of people going to this website.
What happened? So, all these people are downloading my utility.
what happened to the server? So it's very geeky. You go into there's an AI to key .042 for Creative Cloud or some of the other ones, Creative Cloud 2018. By the way, his instructions are wrong. You actually have to go into the Illustrator folder in your apps, not into your app support and library, but you go into Illustrator and then there's a plugin document and then you drag this into the plugin document and then you restart Illustrator. Then when you go to export, one of your export options is Keynote.
Oh,
and so you can bring in,
how cool
you can
is
bring
that?
In an Illustrator.
That's nice.
Yeah, you can bring in an Illustrator file, and then you export it out as a Keynote document, and then you can open it in Keynote. It's a little buggy. It's a poorly written Keynote document, but it'll stay open long enough for you to, you know,
quickly,
like you
drag can grab it out
and turn it. Well, you just select it, and if there's it'll come. If you grab something that hasn't been and it can't be grouped, it needs to be united. So you have to take the Illustrator file in, then you select all the items that you want. And you go under, there's a place in Keynote in the same part, you know, when you're where you can do intersect or unite. You have to use unite, which is kind of a Boolean of all of them, turns them all into one object. So you turn that into one object, and then you go into shapes and you say, make this a shape. That is the, and I've added, over the weekend, I added like 50 or 60 of them in there, and it works really well. And you can like just collect all of the things that you want to put into. What I did is I just built a whole page of all the icons that I use a lot that are all EPS, and I just threw them all together, and you just saved it all out as one Keynote document. Then I just selected each one, hit Unite, and then under format and under shapes and lines, you can unite shapes and then you can make them there anyway. So if you have ever wondered how to get these cool icons into your Keynote documents so that you can use them and they're just there every time you use your computer, that's how you do it. And it's the only way I've found to do it.
And it's free, right?
It is free. It's just you just download it off that website. Nice. I just like to thank him. It was so useful over the weekend. I was like, I got to make this the pick because it saved me. You know, I just couldn't figure out any other way to do it. And I will say that it is a little bit of a bummer that Apple doesn't just import it so that you can make it a shape. But I couldn't get the if I took a regular EPS file or whatever and dragged it in, it'll show up fine. It'll export fine out of Keynote, but you can't turn it into a shape, which means you can't put it, you know, into the library.
Do you know who this guy is? Christian Holtz?
I have no idea who this guy is. No.
He is a researcher in human-computer interaction at Microsoft Research.
Oh, interesting.
He works for Microsoft. But he's in Zurich, and he's going to be teaching at ETH Zurich as an assistant professor of computer science. So it's Christian Holtz, HOLZ.net. ChristianHoltz.net. And then he's got a lot of little projects in here. You probably could just search for Keynote AI to Keynote or something like that and find
it. Yeah, I just did Illustrator to Keynote
Keynote Utilities. The name of it is AI number 2 KEY. And he also has one from SVGs to Keynote.
Yeah, so, I didn't find that one as useful.
Yeah. That's awesome.
But I, yep.
Guy works for Microsoft, but he's making it work for Keynote. I love it.
Well, the secret that no one wants to admit, and I'm not saying that he's saying this or anything else, but in the presentation world, we do a lot of work for a lot of large companies that are doing doing presentations on stage. Everybody uses Keynote, no matter what you give.
Because we're all so sick of PowerPoint has a distinctive look, and I think we're just sick of it.
Well, it also doesn't have, it's buggy. It doesn't have as many controls. It doesn't, you can't,
it's not as beautiful.
You can't make it look as good. Right. You know, Keynote just makes it look better and it animates better and it works better. And it is just a much, much more refined experience. So there's always this hiccup someone hands you. And what you don't want is someone who's really good at PowerPoint because they'll put all this crazy weird stuff into it.
All the workarounds.
So you're like, little weird little picture in pictures and these little like weird little animations. And they are so proud of it. And you just have to go, thank you. Thank you. And then you just tear the whole thing apart and you take all the raw images, you put it back in, and then you try to figure out how to reproduce the crazy thing and then make it a little better by using, you know, one of the plugins or one of the filters. But I don't know anybody.
Do you see people using Prezi, anybody? Cause I used Prezi for a long time. It's not cheap.
A lot of people use Prezi for, for person to person or in a meeting or whatever. Right. We've seen that. But I'm talking about people on stage.
Yeah, so yeah. You wouldn't want to use it on stage. It makes people seasick if you use it on stage. I know.
Yeah, when
done it.
Yeah. when teams work on when you hand it off to a presentation team, they're all Keynote folks. You know, like they're not.
Right.
I mean, I haven't run into too many that aren't Keynote folks.
Right. If I did more presentations, I'd probably get better at it, but I've decided not to do any more presentations. I have a kind of an odd pick for you. It's a website. I found this on Hacker News today, and I couldn't stop reading it. It's The Pudding at pudding.cool, okay? Pudding.cool. Their tagline, The Pudding explains ideas debated in culture with visual essays. And I'll tell you the first one I saw, and there's a whole bunch of them in here, was Hamilton lyrics. Yeah, you'll like that. But there's even more. There's all sorts of stuff in here, including I know you guys will be interested in analyzing the gender representation of 34,476 comic book characters, Hollywood's gender divide, an interactive visual. This is the one I want. Let me just show you this. It's beautiful. An interactive visualization of every line in Hamilton by Shirley Wu. So if you scroll down, it's about big data and learning. Like, for instance, in here, every circle is a set of lines colored by the singer. And then you see the lyrics and the but then there's more down here. Filtering them out by who says what, who sings what. It's fascinating.
This is great.
This is big data in a useful and interesting and a very engaging way of looking at popular culture, a lot of it. So if you're a Hamilton fan, that's certainly a great place to start. But go to pudding.cool. I mean, here's words that rappers love. What city is the microbrew capital of the United States? And they're beautiful. I mean, this is not keynote. I don't know what they're. By the way, did you know that the microbrew capital of the United States is Santa Rosa, which is about 15 minutes north of us? Well, I think they're including Petaluma in the Santa Rosa. It's all the same, roughly same region. So the bigger the circle, the higher the ranking. You see that giant circle there? That's Santa Rosa, right? And we're in that giant circle there. The top 50 cities for beer lovers in the U.S. Data is so interesting, but data visualizations really make it accessible and then fascinating. So this is pudding. In fact, you know, it's free. There's no advertising in it, but they do say if you want to fund it, you can go to Patreon. They're only making $600 a month with 209 patrons. So please kick in some. I'm going to kick in some because they really deserve more. The pudding is fascinating.
I always thought pudding is what Holly called Mr. J.
It's not pudding. Pudding.cool. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week, my friend.
So firstly, I want to just commend you for not buying a house on Apple Pay, even though I would have loved to see Lisa run in there and that watch right off your wrist.
It's so easy.
So my pick of the week. So I've been doing a lot of YouTube lately, and one of the comments I keep getting is that I talk too fast. And people said, oh, you're reading off your teleprompter too fast. And I, especially when people say that, I'm almost never reading off the teleprompter. I'm speaking extemporaneously. I just speak
you're
really, really fast.
You're enthusiastic. That's all it is.
I am. And it's really hard, to, at least for me, it's really hard to change the way that you speak. And when I get with Christina Warren on a podcast, for example, it's like, it's basically you don't need smart.
She speaks at light speed. I've never seen anybody talk so fast. And Serenity's no slouch in that either.
No. What I've been trying to do is, ironically, I've gone to the teleprompter in an attempt to slow down by slowly, incrementally slowing down the teleprompter so that I learn to enunciate as though I went to Juilliard. And the app I've been using, I tried a bunch of them and I ended up, full disclosure, going with an app made by a friend of mine. Well, someone that I know in the Apple developer community, and that's Joel Chaplinsky and Big Bombing Brain something software. And it's really good. So what I end up doing is I write out something in notes. I paste it into this on an iPhone. I put the iPhone next to me. I put the iPad across from me. And then I use the iPhone to control the iPad. You can do it right on the iPad if you want, but I prefer to put the iPad far enough away that it's not within reach anymore. And then I can just, on the iPhone, I can control the speed. I can swipe back if I miss anything or I say anything wrong. And I just sit there and I do like drills. One of the videos I did yesterday was on how I get better or how I succeed at doing what I do. And a lot of people just do repetition, but I've always found that conscious repetition is what's important. Like every time you do something, you have to pick one aspect of it you want to get better at. And so this is one of the tools that I'm learning to train getting better at speaking slower. And just by slowly adjusting that turtle icon, I can drop it down from the middle to like 4.5 and then 4. And sometimes I lose it and I have to go back up a little bit because I don't want it to sound freakish. But it's really been helping me at least trying to speak a bit slower.
Speak exactly as fast as you want to.
Well, the internet will complain either way, right? But it's a wonderful teleprompter app, all that aside.
Good.
It's very useful.
Good. Very nice. 4 score. And 7.
I have to play with it. I played with it in the past, and it worked great. I'm always scared of wireless connections. You know, so we have our teleprompt, you know, software is off of a Mac, and it goes into a teleprompter, but there's always a wire, and I'm always, you know, afraid, because we're in live. So if it gets glitchy, important people are angry.
I haven't glitched, but I don't work in your environment.
No, I hate teleprompters. But I don't.
It never replaces a great host like Leo.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
I'm using it less as a traditional teleprompter and more as a training tool to speak like William Shatner. Because Picard is coming back, so I feel like I have to give Shatner.
Warn people. I'm always like, you know, if unless that person has spent years using a teleprompter, you do not want to use it.
It's very hard to do it well.
It's hard to do it naturally, yeah. And it takes a lot of practice, and people don't realize that it's this kind of, it's like playing the bagpipes or, you know, like, or playing the didgeridoo, because you have to be a couple words ahead while you're talking behind it,
right. Which is typical voiceover, you know, a typical voiceover issue where you're looking ahead on your text, but you have to do that with teleprompters, and people get good at it, but they take, it takes practice. It's not like the first time you ever do it, it's going to work, you know, and otherwise it just sounds very, yeah, not so good. And I just think it doesn't sound, and there are reasons to do it, especially when you're.
Well, I think Renee's got the best reason of all to do it. I mean, I think it's a very good idea for things like slowing you down. I think that's a great idea.
And also just packing a lot of information that you wanted to say a certain way.
If you need to say it exactly right.
Or if you just want bullet points in front of you to remember your talking points. Well,
I mean, we had teleprompters on the old screensavers, and I just found out the other day that I actually had a comedy writer that I just never would put jokes in the teleprompter, but I would never use them because I never looked at the thing. I hate it.
I'm Leo Laporte.
Alex Lindsay did his pick.
I already chose.
Andy Anatko's turn. Sorry, Andy. Your turn.
Hello. Nothing Mac or iOS related is exciting me as much as Dan Slott's long-awaited restart of the Fantastic Four comic book series with Marvel. This is a hysterically funny story that because Fantastic Four was one of like the two major properties between that and X-Men that Marvel movie studios did not have the rights to. The CEO decided that, guess what? We're going to cancel the – why are we promoting the Fantastic Four by having licensing deals and dolls and comic books where you got to cancel the Fantastic Four? And so there's been no Fantastic Four book for the first time since 1963. So it's not just the return of this team. It's also Dan Slott. He's on that short list of writers for me where if he's writing it, I'm definitely going to take a look at it. It's got to be at minimum interesting. Even when I know that I've had the story described to me and I know that it's not the sort of story that I like, I will still read it. And even if I still don't like the idea of people going to heaven to try to bring back someone who died, I still think that's a bad idea for a story, but I will still enjoy the way that this writer happened to have written it. So it's not only a great writer and a classic team, but also by its very nature going to be a really good jumping on point for people who have been wanting to just try something. Maybe they stopped reading comics as recent as a couple years ago because it's just impossible to know what's going on because things cross over everywhere, including into the movies and back. I think this is going to be well worth your time and effort. And you can just download it off of, you can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it on Comixology, download the Comixology app and read it digitally on your iPad or on your desktop. And so that's my pick of the week.
But if you really love comics, you should buy it, put it in a plastic bag, bury it in the backyard for 100 years and you'll be rich.
Not before you get Dan Slott to please take this metal Sharpie and sign over the Indica.
Yes. Now it's really valuable.
Said is somebody whose entire comic book collection was thrown out by his mother in the 80s. Oh, that's fine.
But she's so sweet.
I have mine and I don't know what to do with it. It's just boxes and boxes in my storage room.
I wasn't exactly taking good care of it.
And then my godkids came over and they were just very quiet. I went and looked and they had all of the original black suit Spider-Man, like Spider-Man 252 and up, opened out of their bags, reading them. I had a little heart attack. Then I'm like, no, they're kids. Let them enjoy.
You know what I like to do? I like to buy the bound sets of stuff.
Yes.
I was just thinking about it. I haven't looked at it in ages. The Neil Gaiman series.
Yeah. I just gave that to my godson. The hardbound, the absolutes. They're gorgeous.
They're gorgeous. Yep. What a great gift.
That's a problem. When I put all my books back on shelves after I moved, I realized the problem that like now whenever I buy a reference book or like a novel or something, I'm buying it on the Kindle. The only things that I'm regularly buying in hardcover are like comic book anthologies and the complete Peanuts. And so the thing is, if someone comes to visit my house, they say, oh, look, he's a reader. He has lots of all he reads are like comic books and picture books. And this is not a high functioning man, is he? Like, no, look at my Kindle. Look at my Kindle. I got like all Updike and I got like all this stuff from Google Books published in the 1700s. Look, I've got Hidden Deeps, baby.
This is the Sandman I'm talking about. It's the absolute Sandman and it's in several volumes. And it was very expensive. But boy, is it nice to have. I guess it's not, it's out of print. You'll have to buy it used now. But it's just gorgeous.
Yeah.
I love Neil Gaiman, and so that's why I bought that. And then I bought Calvin and Hobbes in the same way. And
I did too. Oh, it's so great.
Isn't that nice? The complete Calvin and Hobbes is so awesome. Yeah. And then, so the same reason, Andy, for hand-me-downs, I bought The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit in that nice leather-bound set that whoever is publishing now, just so I have that. You know, it's just there's certain things you want to have physical copies of so you can hand
them. I got The Dark Knight Returns and The Watchmen as well.
Same thing, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I did one more edit of like my hardcover like book collection. And of course, my original as a teenager copies of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and The Restaurant in the Universe, and all of those like had to make the final cut because I've got those in like so many editions on my Kindle. But I love the little hard. I want the book that I had like flat on the floor of my bedroom as I lay face down on my bed with my head hanging over the edge of the bed, reading this entire book in one sitting as soon as I got home from the store to buy it.
That's nice. That's what makes a comic book fan. Kids, we're out of time. I want to thank Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Don't forget Vector at iMore.com/Vector. Renee does an amazing job with that Vector podcast, audio and video. Even if he talks too fast, it's really, really good.
I'm trying to do the videos daily now, Leo. We'll see if I survive.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Incidentally, there are a lot of people who tell me that they listen to our shows sped up. So I think those people who are complaining to you should just slow you down.
Smart speed.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. People listen in Overcast and they just 1.5 times. Somebody came in and was sitting in studio during Security Now with Steve Gibson. He said, "Everybody sounds drunk. You're all at normal speeds." We're all talking normally.
And that's Steve on 5 espressos.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Renee. iMore.com. Thank you, Andy Iannacco. Always a pleasure. iHNATKO.com is his website. Yes. And of course, he's on Twitter at Iannacco. I have no idea. Oh, good. New. Oh, no, those are the old roller derbies. I have seen some new ones.
I just published the set from last weekend on Facebook. I'm just about to publish them on Flickr, so they'll be up there very soon.
Flickr.com/AndyI. Mm-hmm. Well worth following Andy on Flickr, I got to say.
Thank you.
And, of course, thank you to our Washington Satellite Bureau. Alex Lindsay. Thank you so much for setting that up. Alex is at the Pixel Core, and if you want to know what he's up to these days, the best place to do that is on his Twitter feed.
And we're looking
at AlexLindsay.
And we're looking for more people to possibly freelance and so on and so forth in DC. So if you're in DC, go to pixelcore.com/staffing and fill out a little form.
You're not moving to DC now, are you?
I am not moving to D.C., but I am here for a while as we get this thing off the ground and get it moving. So, but we're definitely looking for more people. My wife is very attached to
Northern California. We like having you here.
Throw Andy in your bag and bring him back with you.
Yeah, there you go. Why
would you not want to like work in 96 degree weather at 90% humidity?
I have to admit, when I go home now, like, because I, you know, I'm here a couple weeks at a time, and when I go home, I'm always like, holy smokes, we live in a paradise, you know, it's not very wet, and it's 55 to 75 degrees, and I was like, oh, I respect Northern California a lot more now that I'm
good.
Can I say that I know that you're a true friend, and I know you enjoy having me here, because no one who is like watching or listening to this knows that like I was like walking for 5 hours like through DC. There's like a foot around me. It smells like an Apollo capsule, like 5 days into the mission. I'm just sweating through all my clothes, and I smell not unlike a goat.
The fact that
you have not been wincing audibly is a very, very sign of close friendship. Thank you very much.
Although I, 3,000 miles away, I'm wincing audibly right now.
There you go.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Renee. Thank you all for watching. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can visit us in the studio. We have a great studio audience today. Visiting from Kent, Ohio, Eileen and Marty, thank you for being here. You didn't get any olive oil, but I have some for you with your name on it if you want. So come on over. If you want to be in studio, just email tickets at twit.tv. Olive oil not included. If you want to watch live on the stream, you definitely won't get any olive oil at twit.tv/live. But you will have a choice of video and audio streams. And if you're doing that, you should probably be in the chat room, too. Join the kids who are watching live at irc.twit.tv. On-demand versions of this show will be provided upon request with your visit to twit.tv/mbw. Or find a podcatcher. Overcast is nice. Pocket Cast is nice. Stitcher, Slacker, TuneIn, or your favorite audio assistant. And subscribe. That way you'll get it every single week the minute it's available. There's quite a few choices there. And I know you have one of yourself. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. But I'm sorry to say, it's time to get back to work because break time is over. Bye-bye.